yes, love is begging door to door, but finds the silence like no one lives there anymore.
Coming at you live from the floor of the NBA playoffs, where we've just knocked over Chris Bosh. It's the Side Quest, episode 407. I am Dally Domofsky, a.k.a. Cool Rats, and anything else you want to call me. Joining me, as usual, the lovely, the well-built, and the extremely well-hung Eric LMM Smith.
I'll call you asshole. Does that count?
You can call me whatever you want. Just call me. And also joining us, weighing in at 185 pounds of pure man meat, Mr. Ben Strauss.
I gotta be honest with you, I am way bigger than that.
All in your man meat. The episode today of the Side Quest. Welcome, gentlemen, on a very special Side Quest episode.
We're not going to take 3 hours today.
No, we're not. Actually, we did really good the last few episodes. We've only been about an hour and a half, so. I take it back. The last two episodes, we were an hour and a half. Before that, when I had the sports show, we were about 3.5 hours, so. We'll keep it lower. We're going to dive right into it with what we've been playing over the last week, because we know that's a mainstay in video game podcasts, but people do like to hear what we've been playing and what kind of our collective minds have been looking at, and eyes and so forth. So, Eric, you've been playing something. You know what's funny is a couple of us have played something that released today, and then one of us has been playing something that released maybe about 10 years ago today. So let's start with you, Eric. What have you been playing?
I've been playing Max Payne 3. It's a video game.
You have.
It is? What?
Yeah, it's any questions? I can't jump right into it. It is an extremely story-driven game, and I don't want to give too much of it away.
Okay. Let's
see. How's multiplayer?
There you go.
I have not touched it yet, and I probably won't for a couple days.
Well, I gotta say, I'm very interested to see how the bullet time mechanics work, and I have seen nothing online. I do admit I haven't played the game. One, because I watched The Avengers last night rather than, you know, go to GameStop. Two, I don't care about Max Payne anymore. Max Payne, the first game was great. Now, hear me out. Second one, I just said, I have
things. Second one was better.
You know, it looked better, but I mean.
Oh, it was a better game. It played better, had a better story.
I think it was the movie. That probably just ruined it all for me.
That's possible. I never saw the movie, so.
But no, I actually do want to. I do want to play Max Payne 3. I'll probably get to it this weekend.
I'm only about 3.5 hours in. Started around 5:30. Played until right before this podcast started. And it's an incredibly cinematic game. They took a lot of cues right from Remedy and how they build games, and then they merged it with Kane and Lynch 2. It with the whole cinematic style with the pixelating and the light flare and everything, and it's just a very well built, great looking game. And you know, Max is drunk as usual, and you dive around shooting people as he is wont to do. And beyond that, I mean, is there any questions you have beyond the multiplayer I haven't played?
I'm kind of interested in some of the action sequences and really what that plays like, because I've never played a Max Payne game, so I'm not sure how the action and story kind of weave together and how those play. I mean, is it predominantly an action game with like cutscenes, or are they tied together somehow?
Okay, in the previous
is it Grand Theft Payne?
No. In Max Payne 1 and 2, the cinematics were comic books, drawn and voiced, you know, in a comic book style with panels and whatnot. But in this one, they went for proper cutscenes, like in-engine, but to accent some of the like stronger points of dialogue, they throw that up on screen as they're saying it. So like it's automatic subtitles.
Mm-hmm.
And it's incredibly evocative of what they're trying to say. And the action is, you know, you run around with preferably two guns and you tap RB to dive and go into bullet time and shoot as many dudes as you can. But I'd say it's a pretty even mix between story and action.
So, mm-hmm. So, say this to the viewers, listeners, not viewers.
they're watching us, trust me.
Yes. Obviously you've got Rockstar, huge pedigree. You've got obviously the Grand Theft Auto, the engine that they run. The name escaped me, unfortunately, so don't hold me that against that me. I'm not even speaking English. But anyways, you've got Red Dead Redemption and you've got Grand Theft Auto 4. Obviously, Grand Theft Auto 5 is coming out. It's an updated version of the engine. Looks spectacular. Max Payne, put that into context of what we've seen previously from Rockstar and what you expect to see, you know, soon. Where does Max Payne fit in all that?
Okay, I liked Grand Theft Auto 4 when it came out, but I didn't think it was, you know, as spectacular as everyone else did. Red Dead Redemption.
Not kidding.
Red Dead Redemption was probably my favorite Rockstar game, even above Vice City and San Andreas.
Same here.
Just because of the mood and the, you know, the whole atmosphere was amazing. As for GTA 5, you know, I've seen very little of it, but I want to play it. Max Payne, if you played and enjoyed the previous Max Payne games, you absolutely need to play this one. If you haven't, I think it separates itself from the other two games enough for you to be able to jump in on this one. And you won't miss a whole lot because you'll still get the gist of the Max Payne character. I haven't finished yet, so I can't say completely where it rates on my Rockstar scale, but I like the game a lot so far.
Cool.
Cool.
And if you buy it at Walmart week one, you get a copy of Max Payne 1.
What if I don't shop at Walmart?
You don't.
Wow. That's
I'm playing on Xbox. I think it's on PS3 as well.
They have an Xbox 360?
No, really? No. It's the original. Xbox original.
Oh, okay. Hmm. Yeah. Well, that's... Yeah. Okay, I've got one still. That's good. Yeah, maybe. Nice.
Yeah. They cool. For whatever reason, they didn't give you the second game, though, too. I didn't get that one.
Well, it's like Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, but wasn't that on disc?
Yes, and they also did it with Battlefield 3. Well, eventually, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, this is a download code.
Hmm. I think that's the way to go, actually.
Yeah, absolutely, especially on 360 when it's already a two-disc game.
Actually, I find that interesting. A bunch of these, you know, titles we haven't played in years are getting reboots or, you know, sequels, that kind of stuff.
Hitman.
Doing
here.
You think they'll do it?
Hitman looks fantastic.
Oh, yeah, it does.
God, that game looks awesome.
I remember Max Payne 3 being revealed on the Game Informer cover in middle of 2009. And I had no interest in the game. And as time went on, it looked worse and worse to me. And it picked itself back up like within the past 6 months in my mind.
I just like the bullet stuff they were giving away for pre-orders. That was cool.
Yeah. And
you know me though. Or, you probably don't.
James McCaffrey is back for playing Max Payne. He's phenomenal. He's he's in Rescue Me. If you watch that.
I do. Great show.
Yep.
So he does voice acting for the game.
Yeah, he plays Max Payne.
Okay. All right.
Definitely not Marky Mark, though.
No.
Thank God. Anyways.
Marky Mark's too busy doing the Uncharted movie. So
he's out, actually.
Yeah, I know.
Eric, you playing anything else?
Not really. Nothing of interest. I played some Skate 2 and That's about it.
Nice.
Cool.
Minecraft. We want to talk about that for hours on end.
Minecraft for Xbox or for the PC?
PC.
I think we've done like 8 shows about just about Minecraft. So we'll pass. Yeah. I don't know it exists. It's a 2-year-old game. It still sells bajillions. We understand.
Yeah, we'll kind of tie that news in here. Like a million copies in 5 days.
Oh God.
On Xbox 360 for that game.
And Notch acts like he's surprised. I don't know why. Well, I mean, I know he's genuine about it. It's just you gotta know gamers are gonna pick that up on Xbox. Oh, yeah. I mean,
is it people buying it again, or is it people who somehow haven't played it before?
Both.
Or just have, and I guess, you know, it kind of is a intensive game on your RAM, which is what most people are severely lacking in their computers, so a lot of people probably couldn't even play it.
Yeah, and I think that's definitely part of it. And I think the other part is just it's such a novelty. I mean, a lot of people had heard about Minecraft, but it seemed kind of daunting on the PC. So on the Xbox, you'd think, okay, well, it's an Xbox game, so the controls are probably simplified a little bit so that I can get into it. So,
I guess I can talk about it a little bit if you want to. They
8 episodes already. Let's do it again.
I haven't played it much, but if somebody's looking to get into Minecraft for the first time, the 360 version is definitely the way to go, because they have, you know, there's all the crafting and everything in the game. You can there's crafting recipes preset on 360, so you don't have to worry about memorizing, you know, 200 recipes for whatever. They're just in the game already. It's $20. It's $8 cheaper. It is about 6 months behind the PC version in the way of build, but
sure,
it's pricey pay when you got to get it on consoles.
Yeah, you have to go through a different process, certification. Yeah.
Well, remember, an entirely different studio took care of development. That's true.
And they did a phenomenal job bringing.
They did a great job. Game looks amazing.
That's it for me.
Awesome. How about you, Ben? What have you been playing?
I've actually been playing a lot of old stuff. I'm going to start off with saying I played SOCOM and SOCOM 2,
this is my favorite game of all time.
SOCOM 2 is?
Yep.
Wow.
SOCOM 2, yeah. SOCOM 2 is better. SOCOM is like slightly mine. It's like 99 and 98 in terms of, you know, how awesome they are. Reason I'm playing them is remembering. Getting a sense and feel of where I believe shooters should be, because SOCOM, it's like, oh, you've got a missile over here, you've got a bunch of bad guys over here, and hostages over here. How are you going to take care of that? And you decide how. Unlike with, you know, shooters like Battlefield 3 and Call of Duty, where it's like, oh, hey, go right down this corridor because you can't go anywhere else. That's a persistent discussion that keeps happening with a lot of, you know, fans of shooters. They're getting a little annoyed with the corridor. Kind of, you know.
I guess that's why Black Ops is actually looking appealing to some people.
Black Ops? No, absolutely not. Black Ops 2. I've heard absolutely nothing positive about that.
Oh,
yet.
No, there's a lot of branching and storyline and whatnot.
Oh, there will be. There will be. But, I mean, you're just talking to random people who aren't even, you know, core gamers, people that go like, oh, I own Modern Warfare. I own Call of Duty. I own Madden. They're all looking at Black Ops like, what is this? And I mean, I got to agree with them, because look at it. It's the same engine yet again.
I'm actually interested in it. I didn't think I would be for another Call of Duty game. Because it is just another Call of Duty game.
They have branching paths.
Well, I bought Modern Warfare 3 because I wanted to play the story. I didn't really like Black Ops in any way. Treyarch, I love the guys that work there. I mean, I love, you know, their mentality. I love their drive. I honestly believe they're doing something good, especially since they are gamers trying to make games. But the end result is just not my, you know, kind of thing. I find nothing about it, more or less, because, you know, the one thing that's always angered me is the gun sounds. They don't sound like guns, which...
Oh, yeah, the weapon reports are terrible.
Yeah,
Battlefield, it's impossible to go back.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Battlefield's amazing. They actually do suppressed weapons correctly, which I find amazing.
Or more correct, anyways.
Well, fun story. I own a suppressor on my AR, and it's actually pretty spot on, which I found weird. They do very good work. Battlefield guys, amazing. But I bought Modern Warfare 3 and I played the campaign. I tried multiplayer for about 10 minutes and I couldn't do it. It was just, it's missing a spark. I don't know. That's just me.
It's because you've played it 8 times before.
Well, here's the thing. I could turn on Call of Duty Modern Warfare 4 or Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare, and I will not have any problem for hours.
I actually did that last week.
Yeah. I mean, except for the excessive cheating and hacking going on all consoles, It's a great game. And I don't know. I just find the simplicity of it. It's great. But, you know, Call of Duty making $1 billion in 2 weeks, they know what their market is. They know what they're going to go for. They don't care about me. That's fine. They're going to make it from the more casual side of gamers out there. And, you know, Black Ops, I don't know. Not really my thing. But that's why I'm playing SOCOM and SOCOM 2. Zipper Interactive, God rest their souls. It's just one of the best shooting titles I've ever played. I mean, even though the AI is absolutely rudimentary, it's a great game because it gives you the chance to choose your path, gives you the chance to use your weapons as you want. And, I mean, what's more fun than telling your team to, you know, go up to this little perch, snipe for me while I shoot these guys, and then we do this, blah, blah, blah. So I've been playing that. Give myself a refresher of these kind of games. I've also been playing Orange Box because I do that once a year. Valve is by far the best studio in the world for everything. Not everything. That's a generalized statement. Yes, I'm a fanboy of Valve, but Half-Life 2, I play that now and it still looks as good as a bunch of games from last year. It's a general statement, obviously. I mean, it's like saying, you know, look at...
I think episode 2 looks as good, but I don't know. The original one can look a little bit chunky.
Oh, no. It's old. It's very old. You can instantly tell when you pick up that game. But it looks a lot better than games like Ghost Recon Advanced Warfighter, which the moment I put that disc in the game in the Xbox and turned it on, it looks outdated. It looks
incredible. Oh, God. I think I was playing the second one maybe 6 or 8 months ago, and I could not handle how bad it looked.
Yeah, I played it 2 months ago. I played Graw and Graw 2, more or less because I'd been, you know, talking with a couple of friends of mine over at Red Storm Entertainment. And I was like, I need to play this game again. So I did. It looks terrible, but it looks amazing in my opinion, just from where I'm branching out in terms of what turns me on to games. And that's, you know, weapons, gear, that kind of stuff. But Half-Life 2, Episode 1 and 2, and, you know, the main game, just, I gotta say, Alex, which is the strong female lead, is probably one of the best written characters ever in any game that I can think of. Valve always does that, and really what spurred me on was reading the Valve Handbook. I don't know, did either of you two see that? Yep,
I saw it, I didn't, yeah.
I
tell why they are the best, like, the best when it comes to Iron Man.
What that was exactly what Robert Bowling wants to do with his company. Like the freedom to work not on, you know, specific things, but as a company on whatever they think is going to be best. You know, that's.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, this is the kind of thing, I mean, Valve just, they do it, and they're not the only studio. Don't get me wrong. There are other studios out there, and they're the ones that we all know that's like Bungie, that's Insomniac, that's Jurassic, these kind of
companies. But I still don't think anyone does what Valve does.
Well, Valve is all about getting on there. Like, you can't be fresh out of college, bright-eyed and bushy. You have to be about 20 years in, and you have to retain the same kind of love and addiction – not addiction – the same kind of love
addiction is okay.
that you had when you started, when you're 20 years in. You have to have the experience and the ability to think for yourself. Mm-hmm. And that's why I respect them a lot. And also, Gabe is just awesome. So, I mean, you look at all the chants, all those websites that, you know, are, you know, get on there and talking trash on games all day. All of them make fun of Gabe Newell, but absolutely all of them love him.
Oh, yeah.
They'll make fun of him all day, but it's in a way that they love him, not that they hate him. So I've been playing Orange Box, which is great. I've been playing Fallout 3 because Fallout 3.
Is Fallout 3.
I know. Fallout 3 in New Vegas, as much as you'll hear like the really core gamers go like, oh, those games are for casuals. I just sit there and go like, no, they're not. They're just.
What? I have never. I I hope I never hear someone say that because I'll punch them.
Well, don't go onto 4chan's V page because
I don't know why I would do that.
Those are guys that sit like in their basement all day, and that's going to cause flack. But they're gamers. They're really core gamers. A lot of them love the anime stuff.
4chan guys, you can find Ben Strauss on Twitter. And
hey, Dally, let's calm down there. I kid though. Fallout 3, I love the setting. Mm-hmm. And that's what really gets that game for me is the post-apocalyptic, but still with the whole happy attitude, but not, you know what I'm saying?
Sure.
I they get the color right, they get the story right, they get the attitude right, they get the characters right. It's enough to where it's realistic, but it's enough to where you know it's a game. And that keeps you immersed, but still recognizing what you're doing. It's an incredibly tough line. That's what New Vegas did. Obsidian just made more Fallout, which I loved. I mean, Fallout New Vegas.
I couldn't play that game, though, because for the first 5 months, it was completely broken on my machine.
Oh, that sucks. I've luckily never had that problem.
It was unfortunate.
I don't know. But I played that. And then let me round out my discussion with the last game. And this is one I think we should talk about. I brought it up to you, Dally.
Yes.
Mass Effect 3.
Yeah.
I absolutely love and adore every single part of that game because when you talk to game developers and when you understand the limitations from hardware perspective that they have, you recognize why they went with their choice. Now, one, I do agree with this whole indoctrination theory that they're talking about. That's the whole, at the end, Shepard's indoctrinated, the whole ending is a fight. And I actually agree with that because it makes sense. I've literally looked at every possible scenario of that. If BioWare does something along those lines, I'm going to be very happy because I think it's hilarious.
They'll do it if only because somebody gave them an out to do it.
That might be. But Mass Effect's ending is a study in you don't always get what you want. Sometimes the world does not turn in your favor. Sometimes you have
absolutely to true.
Work with what you are.
And however, it just didn't make sense to me.
I get that. It's a video game. We all expect that we get what we want.
No, that's not even it. I could understand the ending if it didn't follow any progression of my Shepard. Like my Shepard wouldn't have bent over backwards and listened to a fake child.
I'll give you that. I mean, one of the things that I thought was funny that Kotaku actually picked up on was a group of beings of light that BioWare talks about in game. You see them in Mass Effect 1 and 3. There's a planet. Forget the planet name. And they talk about how here's our beings of light. They're reportedly the creators of the galaxy that guide us over. And that fits with what you see at the end of Mass Effect 3. And I mean, personally, I've finished it twice now. I've got a third one. I'm gonna start doing my FemShep ones here soon. seriously, I've done every single ending you can do for Mass Effect 1 and 2.
Sure.
I'm working on my threes, and I'm being stupid about it.
You're the kind of person that tries to get every single thing out of the entire Mass Effect series, right?
I'm the same exact way. I played Mass Effect 1 and 2 on PC and 3 on PC when they all launched. But just, you know, 2 months ago, a month ago, I started replaying them all on 360. And Mass Effect 2, I got all but like 3 achievements in it on my second run through, 60 hours of playtime.
So I would definitely suggest checking out the latest iOS game, the latest iPad game, because it's
the Mass Effect Infiltrator? Or?
Yeah, Infiltrator. Yeah, it's actually fairly good.
Steven said it doesn't really play all that great.
Because it's on-screen touch controls. Like it's a virtual keyboard.
Dead Space like, isn't it?
Dead Space did a better job, I think, of it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but it was definitely a different group that made it. It's at least what it seemed like. But it's still fun, and it definitely adds to the overall feel of Mass Effect. So to give you a little background on what I've been doing, I'm also still playing Mass Effect 3. And I'm trying to do the entire Mass Effect experience, right? And so that's I played Infiltrator to get a bunch of that stuff cleared out so that whatever appears in the game I have my Kinect set up so that I can play Mass Effect 3 with the Kinect. And I have the info pad, the data pad, that you can also download for the iPad. I have that set up, and I've actually been playing the game in pseudo 3D. My Samsung has a feature that you can turn any input. So it's not real 3D. It's just kind of this weird, kind of awkward.
I can't believe you're doing that. It always makes me a little bit queasy, that feature.
It does. Mass Effect 3 is actually playing pretty well in that pseudo 3D. Some games are horrible. I tried Dead Space 2. Yeah, that made me want to throw up because it was all dark.
I think is that, and part of the movement in that game is kind of shifty.
Yep, I think you need to have a really clear amount of contrast for it to work halfway decent. But
sure, and now that I think about it, Mass Effect 3 has that.
Yes, definitely. And so I've been trying to get the entire Mass Effect experience, right? And I'm starting to think if and while I've kind of enjoyed it, let me rephrase it. It all works, but not well together as a system, right? The Mass Effect 3 game by itself is spectacular. It's fantastic. It's a AAA blockbuster, blah, blah, blah. All these other little pieces seem like they were rushed, or nothing is half-assed, because you can definitely tell people to put time into it, but they're not the quality that you'd want while you're playing Mass Effect 3 or Mass Effect 2 or even Mass Effect 1. None of these extra bits, feel up to that level. And so you're almost, Mass Effect 3, if I just sit on the couch and play it by itself, feels great. It plays great. As soon as I add these other things in there, it seems just tedious, and it actually degrades from the Mass Effect 3 experience.
Really?
I didn't think that was going to happen. I thought, oh, there's all this extra stuff there that I thought was going to be really cool. But nope, all these extra little things actually degrade from the experience, because nothing works like it should.
That's the exact opposite of what I thought it would be.
First step for what what is probably going to be happening all the time at the tail end of this generation and all throughout the next generation is that you're no longer, and we'll get into this during the second half of the show. I think it's going to be a common occurrence. I just really hope that publishers, when they do start to, or developers, when they do start to spread this across different mediums, really understand how to do it well, because Mass Effect 3 doesn't do that yet.
Yeah, but they're on the right track, I think. Really considering they're trailblazers.
Yeah, exactly. They're the first ones to really take the step, which is admirable, but at the same time, it's still not, it's like the Wii, right? Wii Sports, the original Wii Sports was fine for a motion game. I don't think anyone really wanted more. No one really knew what to expect. No one really wanted more than that. And there are actually decent or pretty good motion games out there. It's tough to be sometimes the first one out of the gate when you're trying something, because it doesn't always go as planned. And in this case, I'd actually recommend not utilizing these extras if you want to get your optimal Mass Effect experience. I think is, don't use the data pad, don't use the Kinect, mm-hmm. because I don't think it works very well. And so that's how I've been playing it. I'm still loving the game. I'm nowhere near completing it, but
I tell you one thing, if I may.
Sure.
BioWare, no matter what, they can make a good story. Yeah. In Mass Effect, they can make characters.
Well, definitely.
I mean, as I told you, I've done literally everything I can in Mass Effect. I mean, every plot twist, every story, betray this guy, kill this woman, do this team. There's one character I can't. Never will, just can't. That's Rex.
Okay.
In no possible way can I kill him or betray him in any of the games.
he's such a badass.
No, it's not that he's a badass. He's just a generally – all these characters are real.
Yeah.
You sit there and you're like, these are people I can believe actually exist.
Yeah.
And I mean, if a game studio can actually bring you to where you care about making sure that this character lives, if you go on to a wiki and go like, how do I make sure this guy doesn't die? Well,
but unfortunately, my favorite character from 2 and 3, from 3. No, you can't save him in 3 without
Ending
Rex. Yes, Morden.
Yes. That
I didn't want to say it out loud, though, in case somebody hasn't played it.
It's been months.
Yeah, I haven't gotten there yet, but that's okay. I'm not a baby like other people are.
No, yeah, I...
But here, that's why I believe in what BioWare's done with the ending, because you can't have it your way. This isn't Burger King. This is a game. This is war. This is life. This is how things happen. Sometimes people you care about die, and there's nothing you can do. And that's why the ending.
And sometimes people invent teleporter technology on their way just so they can make it onto a ship.
Say again? What?
The ending sucked.
Okay. Get out of here.
We won't get into that part. So that's where I'll draw the line.
Yes, I'd like a different ending, but you know what? I could see where they were going.
I know what they're trying to do. I just think that the 18-month dev cycle they had kind of bit them in the butt towards the end there. I still think Mass Effect 1's my favorite, even though it is the worst combat of all of them. I just like the newness of the world.
Yeah.
For the time around. And I still think it has the best shooting.
Yep.
For what it's worth.
When you're in Predator 10 armor and you've got the Spectre Gear 10 guns.
I just, the shotgun that you could use as a sniper rifle in the first game was the best.
Was hilarious. But that's the games I've been playing, sir.
Cool. Before we get off Mass Effect, I just started listening to the audiobooks. I went and picked up audiobook.
I've got those books sitting around here.
Oh, do you have the actual books? I'm really enjoying it. Actually, apart from the really good voice acting, which I've got to say it's definitely good. It's written really well, and it's Drew Karpyshyn, the guy who actually wrote the Mass Effect series.
Yeah, wrote 1 and 2.
Yeah, so it's definitely a solid. So yeah, if you're a fan of Mass Effect like I am, definitely read at least the first 3 books that Drew wrote. So I have been playing a game as well. let me get to the third game last, the newest game last, and I'll get to my first two, which are 3DS games. So I have got, as much as I like the hardware of the PS Vita, it's definitely going through its 3DS growth stunt, or what do they call it? It's 3DS growing pains right now, because there is nothing coming out that's worth picking up. And I'm sorry, even though I know Resistance 3 is going to come out and Little Big Planet for Vita sometime in June, Resistance 3 comes out next week. It's just it's too far away from that launch window, and I've already started picking up other things to play. So there's been this 2-month dry spell right now where it's been like, okay, you know, maybe I should have waited. So I've gone back to my 3DS and playing some of the online modes, some of the extra modes in a couple of the newer releases. One for Resident Evil Revelations, which I loved Resident Evil Revelations. I talked about it before. I really enjoyed it because I felt like it was...
I thought you were kidding.
No. I actually felt it was a really good story, and the controls were pretty... The controls were decent. I mean,
Are you using Circle Pad Pro?
I'm using the Circle Pad Pro. I would not use it without... would not play it without the Circle Pad Pro, but... with a Circle Pad Pro, it actually plays. It's one of the best controlling, next to maybe RE4 on the Wii. It's my favorite control scheme for a Resident Evil game. So, I think there's issues with the actual Circle Pad, but I think overall it plays really well. So, I've been playing online co-op in raid mode, which is kind of like this mission based, separate mode, and you can play it offline or online in co-op and so forth. So. Playing online on the 3DS still weird for me because it's a Nintendo system. I mean, apart from Mario Kart games, it's still an awkward experience to play online on a Nintendo console. But I'm really enjoying it. There's a ton of unlockables in that game, and the Spot Pass and Street Pass stuff. I've actually surprisingly picked up a bunch of missions from people just randomly. driving into work, so I know other people have the game. So that's kind of odd for me, but I'm probably passing cars on my hour-long drive.
Excuse me.
Yeah, it's all good. On my hour-long drive and picking up some missions, but I really enjoy it. I think it's a cool extra mode that adds a lot to the replayability to the game, because you're always trying to get the highest rank. And for anybody that's played Resident Evil games in the last couple iterations, like RE4 and RE5. The mercenaries modes and things like that. There's a lot of emphasis on ranking when you clear chapters. So did you get an A, B? Did you get an S rank? Did you pick up special weapons and so forth? So, going back and playing that has been actually pretty fun. And the visuals are they're better
best
than we
ass in video games.
There it is. It is definitely the best ass in video games, I do have to say. And you see two different female butts. Pardon me for being sexist right now, but the best virtual butts I think I've ever seen. They're not nude by any means.
I'm saddened by this discussion right now.
Yeah. This is going to appear on Kotaku and IGN later. No.
Wait, what?
No, I'm just kidding. No, but the visuals, I'm actually surprised at how well designed the visuals are. And I'm talking about it more from a design perspective. Yeah, they're not quite 360 or PS3 or anything like that, but the way that Capcom... whatever Capcom team designed the art, led the art direction in this game and actually created the visuals, did a fantastic job of making you feel like this was a next gen level game rather than a previous generation game. So definitely looked and felt better than the Wii, and almost felt better than any action game I've played on the Wii, except barring a few of them. But just fun experience. Can't say enough about it. I really enjoyed it. It's to me, it's stunning how well the game came out when it could have gone so south so quickly. I really enjoyed it. And then
I was skeptical to pick it up at first because of the Circle Pad Pro, and I just never got around to it.
Yep.
In the end, I'm gonna try it.
It'll go on sale probably pretty soon here. I wouldn't doubt it.
Yeah, it's just a game that I've kind of forgotten about. Yeah. Now that you reminded me, maybe I'll...
Well, again, I like it because it's a brand new game. It's totally... it's kind of set before the events of just about any other Resident Evil game. I think it's between, like, Resident Evil 3 and 4 or 4 and 5 or something. But, it's... I'm just surprised how good it turned out. It's definitely better than that stupid Mercenaries game that came out on 3DS earlier.
Let's not even talk about that game.
Yeah, we won't talk about that one. So,
does that even count?
No, it doesn't even count. So I played that, some more of the raid mode stuff, and then I went and played Kid Icarus Uprising. I haven't completed Kid Icarus Uprising, but I have gone back to playing it, and God, is Sakurai, whatever he does, he fills a game with content that's just absolutely unbelievable. Just the amount of unlockables and all that kind of stuff. I mean, any of the Smash Brothers games that you guys have played, have either of you guys played Smash Brothers before?
Yeah, of course.
I have never touched the best game ever for college.
Okay, that was GoldenEye. I'm sorry, in my generation it was GoldenEye.
They were the same generation. If you're talking about the best in the series,
yeah,
that's true. And so,
careful for Brawl, man.
Yeah. Smash Brothers Brawl and Melee, Brawl especially had so many extra bits of content that you could unlock, characters and trophies and stickers and modes and this and that. And so Sakurai, who was the director of the game, was the lead on Kid Icarus Uprising, and so he put that same amount of collectibility, actually I think even more collectibility and extras in the game, to the point where it's almost distracting from the main quest. First and foremost, again, another really gorgeous game on the 3DS. I just wish the 3DS had a bigger screen. God, that top screen. Having it that small now.
3DS XL is definitely going to happen. You'll hear it at E3.
Yeah, you'll probably hear it.
We haven't heard a thing about it, but it will.
And so they just dropped the price of the DSi XL. So, yeah, definitely.
And the DSi, and the
right?
DSi. Isn't it $100? Bucks?
Yeah. So it's a great game. It's just unfortunate that I get carpal tunnel when I play it But and my hand, because of how I have to sit to play Kid Icarus Uprising, my hand does go numb. So I'll probably play for about, you know, and I'm not kidding when I say this, I'll probably play for about 2 or 3 minutes, have to pause the game, shake my arm out, and then my right arm, and then go back and play for another, you know, play for more. And then I keep having to pause it. And so it's that control scheme that really,
really. You don't, are you using the stand?
No, because I'm usually on the John when I'm playing
You just gotta bring it and set it on your knee.
Yeah, I didn't want to say it, but no, I'm usually pooping or just sitting on the toilet when I'm so before let me go off on a tangent here. When you guys use the bathroom and you bring your games in with you, you really only poop or pee for the first like minute. And then after that you're like, well shit, since I'm already here. Literally shit. Since I'm already here, I'm gonna start playing some Vita or 3DS or iPhone or Android or whatever. And so you kind of sit there, and then you don't realize it, but it's been 45 minutes, and your ass cheeks are numb. That's what happens to me, at least.
That's literally never happened to me.
Yeah, that's
happens to me all the time. I don't. replaced magazine reading in the bathroom for me, but yeah, and so I'm sitting. That's usually where I play my 3DS stuff, but that's why it takes me so long to complete 3DS games, but. Yeah, my arm just goes numb playing Kid Icarus Uprising. But again, there's just so much to unlock. The visuals are great. The game is actually a ton of... The flying sequences, which the entire game should have been, are extremely well designed. They're so designed that I wish the entire game... I wish a separate game is made where you're just flying around as Kid Icarus shooting shit. Then you get on the ground and it's just kind of garbage. So not garbage, but it just controls so poorly that it almost makes the game unplayable in some respects. But
all I know is this game, like with all the references and stuff, because all of these guys who worked on this game, the references to old games, it really makes me want to know what Sora's working on next.
Oh yeah,
what they're going to do with Smash Brothers, I guess. It's like that's what they're working on.
We're not gonna. I doubt we'll see anything about it at E3.
They have to.
But if they mention something,
I don't know.
They put that like launch buzz trailer out last year.
Yeah.
For Smash Brothers between Wii U and 3DS, like interplay, like they have to have something about that for launch, right?
I'd hope so. I mean, this is basically the same pit model from the or very near the model from the Smash Brothers game that they're using in Kid Icarus, and just really freaking just a great game. It just like I said, it's unfortunate that there's a couple bad design decisions that hamper it from being if it wasn't for those bad decisions, this would be one of the greatest handheld games of all time. But those design decisions pull the game back, and then you're kind of left wondering what could have been better, you know? So, yep, that's what I've been playing. And then, so those are the 3DS games. Now I've also been playing and reviewing Game of Thrones RPG for the Xbox.
I hear you like that franchise.
I am madly in love with the Game of Thrones, with A Song of Ice and Fire. George R. R. Martin's much loved, much heralded series about a series of books set in the mysterious land of Westeros. I had the chance to review Game of Thrones, and I've been actually reviewing it across a couple different platforms, but I'm hopping back on the 360 version right now to go over some of the last few side quests. But man, my review might be up by the time this podcast goes up tomorrow, but God, it's another one of those why would you fuck up a license type of scenarios, right? It's like when Sega makes a Marvel game.
I hear the pitter-patter.
Yeah, I'm sorry. My bad. Terrible, I know.
It's flubbed it. They flubbed it. They freaking... And so...
You couldn't have expected anything else.
I was expecting at best mediocre. I was expecting at best, hey, that it's not horrible, and at worst, there's a bunch of other RPGs out there. They probably just threw a Game of Thrones sheen on top of something else. But no,
Well, that probably is what happened. Just...
No, it's not. Because there are so many freaking issues, technical, design, game-breaking, glitch-type issues with this game that it's almost too ambitious and not it's not technically sound to achieve those ambitions. And so you're constantly left hanging on, God, that's a really cool – that's a neat idea for a fight mechanic, but it's not realized. It's a really neat idea for you know, how the plot moves along, but it's not realized. It's a really neat idea about how your character speaks to other characters and how he formulates his words, but it's not fully realized. It's almost, it, I mean, it's just, it's like big, it's blue balls is what it is. This is game of blue balls. And so it kind of bums me out that it,
is there anything redeeming about this game?
The story, the story is actually, let me rephrase it. It's not, the story is not all that great. It's the plot is actually really good. Of how really? The two characters, you play two characters and their plots kind of weave back and forth, and ultimately in every game, ultimately they stuff happens at the end where things are bouncing back and forth, and you're actually experiencing some pretty intense moments. But the entire game is built around that plot, but which was kind of what the only influence that George R. R. Martin had. He said, I want the game to kind of follow along this type of plot. And he helped create some of the design documents early on for what the game should look like, what the game should feel like, which, by the way, is just so depressing. The entire game will have you depressed almost the entire way. And that's kind of where his influence ends, and you can definitely see where the developer said, well, thanks for your design documents, George. We'll keep that in mind when we're developing this game. And that's basically it.
Who developed this game?
Cyanide, which I think they're a French developer.
Yeah, they've done other stuff.
Probably not the best name for a studio.
Yeah, exactly. So it just, it's licensed game is all it is. Like, it's the Lost Viadamas of this, of this latest TV show.
They totally did Blood Bowl.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Dungeon Party.
Dungeon Party. Christ. That's the name of a...
No wonder why.
Well, so again...
They've been working on this game for 3 years at least.
6 years, apparently.
Good Christ.
Yeah. They started 6 years ago with some initial design stuff, but they didn't really get going until about 2 or 3 years ago. And then when the show happened and they started casting some of the characters of the show, they went back in and added this character skins, like basically at the last minute to some of the in-game characters. But did either of you guys play Lost Viadamas?
No.
No.
Okay. As one of the biggest Lost fans in the world, even I don't think I could have.
Yeah, so I played it, again, thinking, all right, you know, if it follows the plot somewhat of the show and weaves in and out, but Lost Viadamas walked a fine line between what's canon and what's not canon, and trying to get some of the themes of the show without actually hampering or without actually, you know, having any effect on what's going on in the TV series. This essentially does the same thing. They try to grab some of the themes of this TV series or of the books and TV series without actually, without actually becoming the TV series, which in this case is just. Yeah, you can't take like the lowest of the low parts of a TV series and try to build a game around it. So yeah, kind of depressing.
Agreed.
It's not it from what I've been hearing, it's not getting very high scores, and I can definitely understand why. So
is there any price point at which this is a game to buy?
Yeah, you know, $19.99. It's sadly,
that's not good. So you're saying it probably should have launched at $40 to begin with.
Yeah, it should have launched at $39.99. And I do not be surprised if within 2 weeks this game is $39.99. And, you know, probably by E3 this game will be permanently $39.99. And then by the end, I'm not joking, by the end of summer, this game will probably be $29.99. I'm assuming, because it's just not, it doesn't do anything for
it's going to do what, like, the Lord of the Rings game did.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, except the Lord of the Rings games that came out for, like, PS2 were pretty good.
True.
Like, the Two Towers game, that was a...
Yeah.
That was a solid hack and slash.
There was the one that Square Enix made, that Lord of the Rings game, that was, I guess, was all right. It was it was a square type RPG. So, yep, that's what I've been playing. So, it's unfortunate that both Game of Thrones games that have been released so far for PC have been, or for consoles and PC, have been absolutely horrible. And both of them were created by Cyanide. So, they must be sleeping with someone to get the property. So,
well, I guess if they got it before the TV show came, then, you know, I guess it probably didn't take much to get it at that point.
You know, I can bet you what happened was the studio said, listen, we can make this game really cheap. We can use assets that already exist from the TV series with voice acting and so forth, which is bad, by the way. The voice acting is horrible. And we can get it done in a quick turnaround and have this game out by the time the second season starts. They're probably aiming to get this game out before the second season started, but it was probably a time and money thing. That's why Cyanide won the rights to this IP, and it's unfortunate. I mean, I would have loved to see who's the the Witcher 2 guys grab this IP.
CD Projekt Red.
Yeah, CD Projekt Red or one of those Eastern European companies or, you know, Russian companies or Polish companies take over a game like this, because they can give RPGs much more justice, and I think, than a lot of the British or the French developers can. And so, yep, that's it. That's Game of Thrones. That's what I've been playing, and that's it for what we've all been playing. So let's move on to...
Oh, I forgot to mention one thing about Max Payne.
Yeah.
Either... I got really bad at video games over the past week, which is entirely possible. Or it's kind of a big challenge, that game. Like, there's some spots where you will have a tough time getting through the hordes of enemies. I felt I should probably mention that, because I got frustrated a couple times knocking my head against a wall.
Huh. Challenge accepted.
Yeah. Okay, Barney.
Hey, good show.
Okay. We can move on to news.
Yeah. Did somebody just joined in?
Yeah.
Hey, look who it is, guys. It's Steven Strom.
This week you actually are too late for what you've been playing.
And we really, because we, you know what? Should we let him talk quickly about Starhawk?
No.
Wait. No. Do we like him?
No.
Okay, then no.
Hour late.
I was out of this. First off, I was out of the house. I never got any kind of notification as to what time we were recording tonight. And I checked on anything.
Also frequently.
When we say we are going to record every week and when we actually start recording every week are not the same thing.
The three of us were ready, and we waited a half hour for you.
Descent among the ranks, Dally.
You know what? Actually, Mike joined us at 9 o'clock, but we sent him away. Because yesterday was his birthday, and he had no birthday cake, so he was whining about that. So we said, go ahead, Mike. Go play your Diablo.
Okay. Well, I can talk about Starhawk next week. I'm okay with that.
Okay, let's do that.
Okay, actually, I do want to hear about Starhawk.
All right, go ahead. Talk about Starhawk. This is the one game you can talk about. We'll do a special Diablo 3 random battle later.
Okay, great. Starhawk is the new game from Sony, not from Incognito, but from Lightbox, who made Warhawk, which is the sort of follow-up, or not necessarily full sequel to, but this is made by a company called Lightbox. It is a mostly multiplayer-focused online vehicle-based shooter for the PlayStation 3. The whole kind of premise here is that you can jump out of... you can fight on foot, and then you can jump into a tank, and then you can jump into a jeep, and then jump into a plane, but then the plane turns into a mech. You know, it's a lot of cool stuff like that going on, but it's I've been having a lot of fun with it so far here. I don't know exactly what more to say about it, purely because it is a lot like Warhawk. If anybody played the PS3 version of Warhawk, did anybody here play that?
Too much, yes.
Yeah, I played a whole ton of Warhawk on the original PS3, so I was really stoked.
Oh, the original PS3.
On the original PS3.
It's like, what,
yeah, I don't know where
backwards compatible one?
Well, it was.
I still own one of those. They're the best thing in the world.
Yeah. Do you actually use it to its full capabilities?
Not to its full capabilities because I don't want it to blow up, but, you know, I use it.
So, yeah, it's it plays a hell of a lot like Starhawk or like Warhawk. The kind of wrinkle here is that now you can they called it build in battle, I think is what it is, like the marketing term.
Call downs.
Yeah, basically you can call in you sort of slowly accumulate this rift energy, they call it in the story campaign, which is the story campaign is okay. It's not amazing. It's just like a 4-hour tutorial for the main game. It's a very good tutorial, but they never really do anything with the sort of story that they set up. But you collect this rift energy and you use that to build structures on the battlefield, which get called down, like they get shot down onto the planet through like these hot drops. And so you can deploy like a bunker full of weapons and or a tower that you can snipe from, or a facility that builds these builds tanks and stuff. And everything kind of has like they really went all out with the vehicles in this one, whereas in Warhawk it was very standard, kind of you have a jeep, you have a tank, you have a jet that can also enter hover mode. But in this one, you know, everything's got kind of a wrinkle to it. So the tank can be into like a siege mode, which basically just makes it like the siege tank from StarCraft, and you can fire sort of mortars that do a ton of damage, but you have to be standing still to use it, kind of thing like that. The jets now turn into mechs that you can just drop down out of the sky and land on people and stomp on them and stuff, and then jump back into the air and totally just turn into Starscream and go flying away and stuff like that.
Starscream, yes.
Yeah, basically, just it is a lot of that sort of thing. The whole thing has kind of this Western aesthetic to it, so they're definitely drawing from a lot of different wells, because it kind of, the whole premise is like, you know, the Old West in space, so it's very Firefly-esque in a lot of ways. And you look at just about anything in the game, and you can definitely tell where, you know, they're drawing their influences from, and they're kind of wear them on their sleeves. They don't really make any attempt to kind of hide them. Like I already mentioned, the siege tank, and then there's like a hover bike that looks like the sort of the brute chopper from Halo, and some, you know, some stuff like that.
No, I just said, yeah, I was confirming. Oh. Sounds awesome.
I was confirming.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. I think that there are 10 maps in the game. They're all a lot more varied than the ones in Warhawk were, because originally in Warhawk there was 16 maps or something, but they were all just four. They were literally just four maps, and then they would have like four variants on those maps. So like this is this map, but smaller and smaller and smaller to do different kinds of modes and stuff. And the maps in here don't feel like they ever quite get to the same size as Warhawk did. But
sure.
Like I said, they feel a little bit more varied. It definitely feels like there's a lot more going on in each of mm-hmm. them. But it gets kind of tough to. I'm a huge fan of dogfighting in those games, and when you're in tighter quarters than you were in Warhawk, it gets tough to do the aerial combat. Conversely, though, it makes the ground combat a lot more feasible than it ever was in Warhawk. So
you know what's funny is I didn't really know what to think about this game. I previewed it at E3 last year. When they had it out there, and I actually did enjoy it quite a bit, but I didn't know why I enjoyed it. And then Mike Wehner did. Mike Wehner did I think Mike did the review of it for Tekka, and the way he described it was, there's a reason I like Starhawk so much. It's because it's the proper Red Faction guerrilla game that should have taken place. And I thought, holy shit, I loved Red Faction Guerrilla. And I definitely see now with the ground portion, the ground fighting, I guess, that Mike was saying, it really kind of leans towards. Did you play Red Faction Guerrilla?
I played a ton of Red Faction Guerrilla.
Okay. Does it kind of remind you of that?
Actually, it's funny you should say that, because that was the very first game I thought of as I was playing
awesome.
It.
Oh, so I've totally got to pick up Starhawk now.
It doesn't play like it, though, just so you know.
Right, that's what it doesn't play like it, but it brings back that...
It does have a little bit of the kind of look of Red Faction Guerrilla, kind of definitely kind of influences my opinion on that. But also the fact that all of the buildings that you create are destructible at any given point, so you can anything that anybody calls down from the sky can be blown up with just a rocket launcher. That kind of brings that feeling of Red Faction Guerrilla too, of that sort of just absolute mayhem going on at any given time. I've run into a couple problems with balancing in the multiplayer, especially when it's in zone matches. So how you spawn into the game is you literally, every time you spawn, you fall down in a drop pod, a la the Starship Troopers book. Or ODST, I guess, is more contemporary.
Section 8 and Prejudice both do that as well.
Oh, okay. You can, when you do that, you can drop down onto an enemy vehicle or an enemy, infantry and an enemy base, and it will just destroy anything that you land onto. But, there's a very clear indicator of where you're going, where this person is going to land with. So you can always kind of move out of the way if you're paying attention like you should be. And you won't immediately destroy a building when you drop on them either. The buildings are a little bit more resilient. But the problem you run into is that where you are able to spawn, especially in zone mode, is dictated by this sort of color on the map. Green means you can spawn there, red means the enemy can spawn there, that sort of thing. And when you take over a zone, anything around that area is a place that you can spawn. So if one team happens to get control of the majority of zones very early on, they can keep spawning closer and closer to the enemy. And if say they get build 400 tanks all coming at you at once, it's incredibly difficult to push yourself back up to rubber band back to win the match. So you can.
That's almost exactly like Section 8.
Is it?
Yeah,
the original situation. Section 8 or
both of them.
The second one. Okay.
Both of them, that situation you described is almost exactly why I got frustrated with that game's multiplayer. It's you're fighting a losing battle if you get behind at the start.
Right. And then when you do get behind, it's you pop out of your drop pod and you have a 10-second timer where you're invincible inside of that drop pod. But if you wait inside of that drop pod, then just everybody knows that where you are, so they can just line up their tank shots and blow you to hell. So then your only defense becomes to land on dudes, but then there's always more dudes coming at you behind, after you take out
that. That's not a defense. That's a dream come true.
it does get pretty fun to drop on tank. Yes. that part is fun. What's the kind of general way I've kind of been thinking about this game in my head is it feels a lot like that sort of style of PlayStation exclusive that you kind of only get on PlayStations, sure. Like back in the PS2 days, and even now today, sort of like an Infamous, where it's not the triple A tier game that everyone in the world is going to be playing, but it is incredibly solid and it has that feel of a PlayStation exclusive. So it feels high quality. It feels good, and it feels like it'll definitely appeal to a certain market. But at the same time, it feels like 10 years from now, the people who are playing Starhawk now will probably be playing Starhawk then. But you're probably not going to see a lot of uptick,
sure,
in that over the intervening time. Maybe not 10 years, but that's kind of ridiculous. But and then it's a little bit weird to see a game like this that is so heavily focused on the multiplayer, because the single player is so short and doesn't really do. It has a lot of interesting concepts, but it doesn't really do anything with them. It's kind of interesting to see this where we would imagine that the PlayStation cycle is winding down, right? Like the PlayStation 3 cycle is kind of coming to a close. So a game that is, so multiplayer focused, I guess Halo 2 continued on into the 360's lifespan, but it just seems a little bit weird to drop it this late, drop a multiplayer shooter like this late into that. So.
Aaron describes it as, it's like EVE Online, but with Transformers.
What an asshole.
Interesting.
Yeah, I'm much more intrigued in this game now, based on the description you're giving me here.
Yeah.
Hey, that's what I said.
I know, I'm just
you're
saying.
You're copying me.
I totally copy you.
Yeah, I would definitely recommend it. I'm going to be reviewing it here shortly, but you can probably expect a pretty favorable review. So, yeah.
Cool. Well, let's move on to news.
Move on to some news.
Yeah, we got to plow through these news.
There's 100 stories again.
They all kind of remain revolving.
There's actually, I got one up here that I didn't put in here that we can mention quick. The Blizzard and Valve legal dispute.
Yeah, the Dota.
Over Dota. This turned out in the exact opposite direction of how I thought it was going to.
With Valve. Turned out exactly like I thought it would.
Yeah, you're kind of right. I just kind of thought that Valve would turn it over.
No.
Because they don't have any right to it.
Let me put it this way. When we were talking about Valve and I was singing their praises, these guys are gamers. They're nerds. They don't care about the business aspect. I mean, they do. There's a slight business aspect. They know what they're doing. They make buckets of money. Look at Gabe Newell. He's richer than all of us combined and everyone else we know.
40th in the world richest.
Yeah, he's up there. They don't go into those talks.
He's richer than Jesus.
We have to keep this thing. They go in there like, how can we make this work? And they talk and they compromise. And these guys, unlike where Mojang and Bethesda goes like, oh, Bethesda's like, we have to protect our national sovereignty or whatever nonsense that we're talking about. Rather than that, you know, this was like, oh, we have a meeting of the minds. This is what you guys are doing. Let's make this work. That's why I respect them even more, because rather than draw this out into a large legal battle, they sat down and talk. They just act like people and it works. And I mean, it turned out exactly like I thought it would. There's no way that would have gone to huge legal battle of trying to fight.
I didn't think that would happen. I just figured that Valve
would have given up.
Yeah. I mean, because, you know, in the end, it doesn't really matter because Blizzard or Valve, no matter what they title a game, they could crap in a box and people would buy it. So it doesn't matter what it's called. Yeah, exactly.
I just, you know, they probably went in there going like, look, we want to do this game. This is how we want to do it. What can we do to make you guys happy?
Yeah, so it's Valve keeps Dota and Blizzard is renaming Blizzard Dota to Blizzard All-Stars.
Yeah.
All-Stars, which, I mean, Battle Royale. Don't forget the Battle Royale part.
Yeah. But this decision makes me incredibly happy because it reaffirms the belief that the guys who are at the top tier of how game development is how game development should be. It's not about how much money you can make every week. It's about how do we make the best game experience for our consumers.
Well, except I don't know, because both the people at the top of those two companies rake in millions of dollars on a weekly basis.
They don't care. They just wanted to figure out how do we make the game. They focused on the game, not the individual, you know, studio and how they're affected. That's how I feel. Obviously, I could be completely wrong, but it just reaffirms my belief in those companies that it's not about the bottom line. It's about creating the best experience.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on to delays. We talked about BioShock a little bit last week.
Yep.
And I want to reaffirm that I still think BioShock's going to be a great game, even though those two didn't think so.
No, it's going to be a great game. Don't worry.
What did they say?
They were fully convinced that this is a panic push.
No, it is a panic push.
No, I don't think it has.
I never said it. I thought it had anything to do with the game's quality.
Right.
I thought it had stuff to do with the game's level of completion.
Right. Yeah.
I don't think either. I just think the man upstairs told them they want Grand Theft Auto.
The man upstairs, I think, said we need multiplayer in this game because single player games aren't going to do well. Although we will get the Grand Theft Auto story seems like there's a lot of I don't know. I don't know what to think about that yet.
BioShock had multiplayer or it's not going to have it still. I don't think. Because you can't get a full multiplayer in there in 4 months.
Unless you farm it out to a different developer and then working on something still, along the line.
Yeah.
It's still not possible.
But my biggest thing about that is going to happen just because. What?
Are the Koreans downloading again?
Yeah, no, I have no idea what he's saying.
We never have an idea of what he's saying.
Awesome. What was it going on? BioShock.
Yeah.
Ken Levine, knows what he's doing.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. That was my very first defense.
Ken Levine knows what he's doing. If that game isn't good enough, it's not good enough. It's the exactly. same reason why I don't question Gabe and the team at Valve why we haven't had Half-Life 3. Because I would much rather wait for the best game ever than have to get a game that I've been expecting for a while and have something I didn't want. Yeah, and sure. both of those studios are able to say, we can make what we want. Mm-hmm. We'll make sure it's right. Sorry you have to wait, but you will not regret it when it comes out. And that is what Bioshock Infinite is going to be.
On the other hand, game that did get a panic push is Tomb Raider.
No question about it.
Last year at E3, there was two demos shown, one to everyone. That was the whole boat sequence or whatever.
I loved how
out
they
in the water. And then there was one behind doors that was more action-y, Tomb Raider-y. And apparently that one didn't look good to very many people.
No, it did not.
So, and I was never all that amped for it. So it getting pushed is a good thing to me.
So here's... I was hoping that it would be released this year because all of a sudden we don't know what's going to happen with the Wii U and any Vita and 3DS games coming out, but it's starting to get a little dry with some of the releases going on towards the end of this year. Obviously, we still have Assassin's Creed 3 and we still have the Call of Duty and we have, you know, a few other games.
Is Fortnite coming out this year?
No.
Epic?
No. I think that's pushback as well. So,
what's Naughty Dog's next game? Last of Us.
So they Last haven't
announced coming out.
Supposedly, year, but it's
no,
but they haven't
that's
announced
this
the
year.
They haven't announced
so next
the
year.
It's coming out this year.
So next year.
It's coming out this year.
So what I'm getting at is here are the games that were just within the last week announced that they were delayed. Tomb Raider, BioShock Infinite, obviously South Park, Metro Last Light, Company of Heroes 2, all the THQ games were all pushed.
And Devil's Third is put on.
Who knows when that game's ever going to come out?
If
the thought is, we believe EA or Ubisoft's going to pick it up.
I could see EA picking that up.
I could very well see EA pick it up.
I'm going to watch Konami pick it up, and I think it'd be hilarious.
You're going to see Namco. Tecmo is going to pick up Devil's Third.
That'd be great.
So I think, it's just one of those things where, and we saw this back in 2010, where a lot of games were delayed into 2011. And so it seems like it's happening again. There's well, definitely this 2-year flux where every
other
year. We've
seen it a bunch over the past 2-3 years.
Well, look at it this way now. 2013 is now stacked with games. You got Tomb Raider, BioShock, South Park, Metro, Company of Heroes 2. What was the... insane if they're even making that. They've haven't even started talking about
it. I have a huge doubt on that one.
Yeah. So there's a bunch of these games coming just in the first quarter of next year. All over again, a giant first quarter. It's going to be a huge year, 2013. Obviously, you might see another Xbox or whatever that year. And so 2011 or 2012 is now looking like it's kind of a rebuilding year rather than a...
Everyone kind of expected that coming in.
Yeah, it's not gonna match 2011.
It's the off year from the last year in that series. So there's not a whole lot to be done. Wow.
Dally, you said something earlier that kind of seemed interesting to me. You mentioned you don't know what's going on with the Vita.
Yeah.
Sony, I think this kind of segues in. Sony has said that they were going to be announcing, 20 titles at E3, but they have also said that they're not going to be talking about PS4 or anything.
Right.
My guess is that we're going to see a big Vita push coming here at E3.
And so,
they're going to.
No, yeah. That's most. That's I think that's a given. And I think it's because they need to sell hardware.
But see, here's the problem that they haven't grasped. It isn't the games that's going to sell that system, it's the price.
Yes, it happened to the 3DS. Yeah.
Do you think you know, price drop announcement at E3?
I don't know if they can. Well, maybe I think a price drop on memory sticks.
Why don't we hold
I
off
gotta
on
interject
that.
Real quick.
Okay.
3DS, it was a price drop, but it was also the games.
It was a
All
big
of the games that came out out months afterwards.
No, hold on. Well, the big games that came out at the end of November. Yeah, the price drop was in August, and the only game that came out in around that time frame was Star Fox, at least in the U.S. Actually, even in Japan, only big game was Star Fox, and that
well, no,
that
Super Mario 3D Land
that came out
that
in November.
Huge.
That came out
that
in November.
That came out in November.
Sales yeah, did start. November. Sales did get a jump start in when that price drop happened. Sales started to kick up.
Huge,
it wasn't huge, but
it just about doubled every.
Yeah, it did. It did. That's true. Months. It doubled previous sales. Yeah, and so I think. And we'll get into Sony's going to be our big topic for next week, but they definitely need to sell hardware because, as we noted, as sales figures came out this week or last week, the Vita now has 1.8 million hardware units sold just after about between 4 and 5 months. Which that's worldwide,
going,
by the way.
It was going. That's the end of March or the end of April.
Okay,
it's
the end
of
April. Yeah.
Yes. So like, that's not good.
Yep.
No,
it's not the end of the world bad.
No,
but it's not.
That's very nearly end of the world bad when it comes to launching a system.
So think of it this way.
Saturn numbers.
Nintendo, hold on. Nintendo recovered with the 3DS because they had huge, huge releases in Monster Hunter, which was just a remake of the Wii version, Mario 3D Land and Mario Kart 7, and now they are consistently the number one selling hardware in Japan.
They're outselling everything else combined on a weekly basis.
Yeah. And so Vita is selling far less than PSP. Obviously, the PS2 outsold the PS3 when the PS3 was released. So we know that's a trend with Sony that seems to continue
because
of
the price.
Knock that shit out
because of that price, and so they. These Vita sales are definitely not what Sony wanted. Sony wanted, you know, probably 2.5 to 3 million hardware units. Their forecasts were pretty high. And Ben, you might have more knowledge of this than I do, but 1.8 million is not a lot. And part of that is because they missed a very crucial holiday season in the U.S.
Yeah.
I almost think they should have launched in the U.S. instead of in Japan. Personally, just so
yeah,
we could get those.
Japan,
you know what the reasoning
was? Japanese company would never do that.
Yeah, exactly. Japanese company wants to launch in Japan first. Know what they're, you know, I mean, because
the
Vita, remember.
The DS launched in the U.S. before it launched in Japan.
Well, remember,
by a month.
The Vita, Sony is very, you know, home base kind of oriented.
Yeah.
They saw, oh, look at the PSP, the Americans, whatever, they buy it every now and then, whoop-de-doo, are huge markets in Japan.
Yes, yeah.
And they said, here's the Vita, we've got dual joysticks, you guys are going to be able to do all these games, here's Monster Hunter, here's Ace Combat, which, you know, was on 3DS, which, you know, Namco made a great decision on. A bunch of other, you know, console sellers went to the 3DS because they recognized what that console could do. Mm-hmm. The Vita, on the other hand, they lost all of this stuff, but they go like, well, we've done great for PSP. Let's go ahead and push into Japan and the Americans and all the other guys and can do whatever they want. And that cost them because that Vita is not anything Japanese gamers want. The social and mobile scene has just exploded these past 3 years. Nobody cares about having a dedicated console when they can play all these great games from Tencent and from Gameville and all those other great, you know, all these other mobile and social platform networks. They don't need the Vita. You know what I'm saying? And what Sony should have recognized was said, oh, crap. Let's go to America. They love this kind of stuff. They want graphics. They want performance. They want the biggest and best. The social games aren't the biggest thing for them. And that's where they lost out. And now that they finally launched to the U.S., which they did, you know, really good sales for the first week, it's turned into how do they, you know, do anything? And I'm just – you know what I think is going to be the saving grace for Vita, if at all? Call of Duty, which is a sad – sad truth.
But
you've got
it's a good point because if you want to move your
Mike?
If you want to move the, what
what
Mike
What?
What's Mike doing here?
We are adding a special guest onto the episode.
Holy crap, it's Mike.
Hey, what's up?
We're being invaded by
Mike.
by the games industry gamer and industry gamers crew.
Mike, how you doing, dude?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you?
Dude, awesome of you to join. Now we just got to get James and David in here.
And we'll rename the podcast.
Games Industry. Well, Eurogamer is actually doing their own podcast now.
That's true.
Done, done, done.
So, Mike, what we're doing was right now we're just about to get into the NPDs, and then we're going to hop into some Xbox E3 stuff. Yeah, I think we're tailing off right now on some of the Vita talk.
Yes.
The Vita sales, yeah.
I was actually about to make an analogy that I think Dally would have really enjoyed,
sure.
Which is, well, because if you want, like Ben was saying, if you want to put in Japan, you want to push a mobile device, you push Monster Hunter. Mm-hmm. But you want in America, you want to push anything. Basically, you push Call of Duty. And he said something that seemed pretty interesting to me, which is that Americans love that shit of like the higher level, you know, the high heavy graphics, you know, very powerful, that sort of thing. And which I think is partially why Sony also does well in Europe. They do the PSP did a lot better in Europe than it did in America. And I think that's because, mm-hmm. And this is where my analogy comes in that I think you will enjoy. That's because. I think it's very much the same sort of mindset that brings you sports cars and, you know, the Lamborghini and, you know, that sort of thing and muscle cars in America and that sort of thing. Whereas in Japan, you look and everything is – a lot of it is very, you know, cheap and cheerful kind of stuff like that. Whereas it's a lot – in America, it's a lot about more power, more, you know, more horsepower, more torque, you know, that sort of thing. Whereas – and then in – Europe, it's a lot like more style, more you know, more sleek, more all of that. Whereas, and those are a couple of areas where the Vita does beat out the DS, like, and especially and even the 3DS. Both of those systems, in my opinion, are ugly little boxes that I kind of feel like that kind of make me feel like I'm playing a Tiger Electric game from the fucking 1994 or something.
Those games were amazing.
Yes.
I did play a lot of Spider-Man, but that's not the point.
Darn
the point is, the Vita looks and runs really, really well. And I think that speaks to those two markets on two individual levels. Because, you know, and this is another thing where Sony is a hardware company. They are not a software company. And I think that is why it will do so much better around here. And they keep designing these devices that should do well in our markets, but then don't market their software or their kind of campaigns towards those markets. They try to push into the hey, yo, look at this cute little device that plays your Monster Hunter and you can do that. Except that's not what they've built. They think they've built the Nissan Versa, whereas what they've done is they've built a Koenig Zeg. And expect everybody to treat them the same. And
so I heard a really good analogy, and this is me being I won't relate it to cars. Never mind. Here's the analogy that I heard. Microsoft is they come from a strong background of operating systems and software, and that's why Xbox Live and Xbox are the ideal like social connection for video games, at least for consoles. It's the best, probably the best operating system of all of them, even though it's shitty by our standards. But they've definitely built up the best operating system, the best base for video games. Then you have Sony, which is built up easily. It's built up. They've built up the best hardware. They know hardware better than any of the other console manufacturers. Their hardware is top notch. But they fault in other areas. And then you have Nintendo, which is every
like
Nintendo
pricing.
Game. Well, that
across the board.
But then you look at Nintendo, and Nintendo is the company that very rarely will they have a shitty game, like Wii Music, you know, or like Fable the Journey or Fable Heroes, whatever. Nintendo makes games and makes gaming experiences. And, you know, maybe down the line we'll have one console to rule them all, but... And that, I think that's why the Vita, which is a fantastic little hardware device, it's wonderfully designed, yet it doesn't have the operating system. It doesn't have the quality Sony first-party games that we would want.
It doesn't play half the games that it's supposed to be playing right now.
Exactly, exactly. So there's a lot of promises that haven't materialized yet. And you know, we'll see. Hopefully there's the sales pick up for Sony and the Vita. They're not going to abandon it. And you're right. This E3 is basically going to be all about the Vita.
I think a price drop and those 20 titles that I think that really blow it up for them. If those 20 titles are the right 20 titles, and if that price drop is the right price drop, you know, if it is enough of a price drop, you know, I don't think $50 is going to cut it. I don't think.
I don't expect a price drop. Maybe a bundle.
Maybe with a memory card.
And a memory card or a memory card price cut.
Well, we'll find out in about 3 weeks. Here we'll be. We could be eating crow.
I really think that they need that $199 price point.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I it's just pretty necessary. I mean, you add the $199 plus Call of Duty, maybe an Assassin's Creed, mm-hmm. and I think you have a good holiday system there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they'd just be selling at such a loss there. I don't know if they could do it.
They can't do it at all.
Monetarily, they can't do it. But I think to get the console out there, they almost need to.
Yeah.
What they need to do is hijack the United States drone system and then go invade China for those rare earths. And then they can build it at Black Ops 2.
Wow.
They don't have to build it at a loss anymore.
NPDs.
Shit didn't sell.
Correctly continuing to become irrelevant. Yes. NPD, you know, what we had this last month was, oh no, everything's going down, everything's blowing up, which, yeah, sucks, but we all know, I mean, we're, 7-8 years into this current console cycle, and everybody's going like, ooh, hey, look what these mobile devices can do. That's fun. They don't track any internet sales. They don't track...
That's the big thing, if you ask me.
Yeah, that's exactly the best thing.
Zero digital purchases.
That's insane to me.
You know who the biggest sales were for that month? Anyone? No. Trials Evolution.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes. Correct.
Minecraft is doing very well now too, so that might.
No, Minecraft will be this month.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying though is Minecraft.
Well, it still won't be the biggest seller though because Diablo 3.
No. I'm talking like pure digital front.
Yeah.
Yeah, digital. I mean, Minecraft 1 million. You can't scoff at that. There's no possible way you can.
And $1 million at $20.
Yeah, exactly. That's hoary crap. excuse me. The point is, NPD, you know, they give us these numbers and they say, oh no, the games industry is down, all of this. And I'm just sitting there going like, no, they're not. Quit it. It's just shifting. You guys have to embrace this.
We just moved into a better apartment.
Yeah, really. You know who is embracing it? Nielsen. Mm. And they don't tell anyone anything.
That is very true, yeah.
Trust me. And it's funny because they're based out of Cincinnati where I live. I've tried talking to them. They're like, nope, you have to pay. So that's expensive.
And that's why they do it, because they want their money.
Yeah, Nielsen's some, you know, great people, lots of them. They have a very strong relationship where the university I went to actually conducted one of their like mock marketing plans. They do it for recruiting for a lot of people. A bunch of my friends got jobs with them. They're very active, and you know, they have three people or something for gaming. I'll have to message her and ask exactly how many, but they don't talk. They don't say a word to anyone because they keep it to themselves. And that's something I think any site worth their salt is going to have to continue to push. But NPD is becoming more and more irrelevant. Not irrelevant, but less of the picture.
Ben,
yes.
What you're telling me is that they're very secret, very secretive. They don't talk a lot. They know everything that we want to know, but we don't. They do a lot of recruiting in your area. Are you sure that they are not the Illuminati?
I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
It's a heavy heart to say it, but I'm pretty sure.
I think Dan Brown needs to be our next guest, is all I'm saying.
I'd seriously still like to see – I'd like to see more open discussion on these numbers, but even still, you have to understand. I mean, do any of you want to tell people how much you make a year? Absolutely not.
$6.
$6. So,
11D.
It's divisible by six.
How about that? By six.
But I respect where they're coming from, but it, you know, to people who want to invest, to people that want to create, you know, new companies, it's extremely hard to find out that information. It is extremely hard. I can tell you this first and third hand because yeah, it takes a lot of research and nobody details what they're doing. You look at companies like Wargaming, who does World of Tanks, like I said. They've got 800 people after like a year. They're expanding into Korea. I mean, they're making bank, but you don't have any idea how much money they're making. Well, the only way to gauge is to look at how the, you know, the, to actually play the game, see how many people are spending money on premium accounts, spending money on paint jobs for their tanks, spending money on premium tanks. And you realize how many people have those. It's ridiculous, but you'll never hear the numbers. So I think, you know, in the next 3 to 4 years, for any site to say, here's how the game industry is right now, is going to be incredibly tough. In fact, it's probably going to be as, you know, reliable as some sites that I won't recognize or mention because we all know who they are. The ones that post these kind of numbers and you go like, well, that's not true. So in the next 3 to 4 years, this kind of stuff that a lot of these sites post up, here's how this month was for gaming, is going to be, it's going to be bunk. It's just, there's no way we can accurately gauge how the industry's doing. I mean,
you can't accurately gauge now. There's with so many different distribution methods, whether it's,
I know.
I mean, look at like what the boneheads at Nintendo do with their digital sales, right? You can't even earn money unless you sell 5,000 copies of a game or whatever the number is through the WiiWare service. Well, if the company that's hosting the service isn't going to promote your games whatsoever, and you're putting, you know, tens of thousands of dollars into the creation of these games and then nobody knows about it, why would you even bother? You know, I mean, how would you even know how many actually sold? So, I think the NPDs are almost for the longest time, at least to me, they were fanboy warfare, right? It was, oh, look at, you know, now it's the Wii has been the number one console for 4 years in a row. And now it's like, oh, the Xbox has been for 18 months. In the end, it's like none of that really matters as long as you get the games you want and I get the games I want, I almost don't care anymore. Well, from a fan perspective, I should say.
Such an
think
Xbox
about these games like
such an Xbox.
Well, like Zynga, I mean, they're making stupid amount of money. Other companies that are on the social and mobile track, other companies that are embracing these, and they're seeing all these daily and monthly active users that just defy logic. And we don't know the kind of money they're making, except for the ones that have to do IPOs because they're getting way too big. It's funny because you look at these kind of numbers and they're just destroying the kind of numbers that, you know, these traditional publishers were doing at the same time period in growth. So like EA was not making this kind of money how, you know, like 2 years into what they were doing. I'm interested to see how, you know, game journalism, game publishing, game anything is going to react to, you know, all these mobile titles coming out. I mean, obviously right now, today is the flood. I mean, this year, next year, a couple more years, today it's the flood. We're going to have everybody and their mother trying to get to it. And this is like the 80s. We'll have our crash. I bet we will. Something's going to blow up. And then, you know, it'll stabilize. And we'll have our specific developers, publishers, entities working in that space, and we'll have a better idea. But, you know, it's funny reading, you know, some of these guys that have been here for 10 to 15 years talking about this is the most exciting period in gaming they've ever seen. And they were around for like the ET days. You know what I'm saying? So NPD out the window completely. I mean, it's fun listening to it. It's fun hearing it. It gives a good sense of where traditional consoles are, but it in no way accurately ever tells us what the, you know, the industry's doing.
So let's do a 30-second moment of silence for the NPDs. That was all. That's all I wanted. 1 second is good.
I was about to say 30 seconds of silence. That's worse than what we normally do.
That's worse than every time I listen to you and Eric. It's usually about 45 minutes of silence for me.
No.
Yeah.
That's not inaccurate.
Right. Not now, Ben, you talk about a crash, but the difference between the crash that we had with gaming before and now is everyone games on their smartphones and no one's getting rid of their smartphones.
But they don't have to game on their smartphones.
But people do game on their smartphones. In fact, that's seemingly what they do. So, I mean, the problem, The problem now is more like discovery because of the flood, not necessarily of that entire market going away.
I see what Link is saying there. Yeah.
No, I very much do. Yeah, it's a different kind of crash. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah. Right, and part of the yield crash too was because, you know, we had 800 different factions kind of all vying for attention at any given point.
Well, that's what's going on today, though.
Right, but you've still only got the three major consoles and, you know, NPC, and then, you know, smartphones and stuff like that. But again, as far as dedicated gaming systems, you only have, you know, the big three. And then, you know, everybody else is playing, and, you know, PC gaming right now is stronger than it's ever been, and nobody's getting rid of their PCs, at least not yet, although I believe eventually tablets will.
The people who never played PC games are getting rid of their PCs, but they don't matter.
Sure, but what I'm trying to get at is that, like, a lot of that was hardware division, and smartphones are not going anywhere. In order for there to be a complete video game, you know, crash, smartphones would have to crash too, and that's not going to happen, at least not now.
Not complete, but very severe.
Okay, I mean,
for there to be another full video game crash, there needs to be a huge influx of terrible games.
So yeah,
sorry, Call of Duty, you ruined it for everybody.
No, Call of Duty's not ruining it. They're just not innovating.
That's a joke for Eric.
Understand.
Yeah, if smartphones are going to die, it's going to be someone like Apple killing them, or another company that Apple will end up buying, at which time they'll bring all those developers over, and this will just continue again and again and again.
Well, that's business.
Yeah.
You saturate until you find the balance.
You think the video game industry is just going to be a constant, like, cycle of explosion, compression?
That's just business in general.
Yeah, that's how it works.
It really depends on your timeline.
That sounds like my sex life.
that's way too much.
You gotta fucking ask the Allied Master Computer how to stop the heat death of the universe. But a lot of people, myself included, probably like to think that part of the fact that video games are an artistic medium, you know, even though it is still very much a business, you can't deny that. I certainly can't. That it survives just on the laurel, or just on the concept that there are people out there making games not for money but for themselves, and that's happening probably now more than it ever has been. You've got a lot of people making art games and making independent games, and, you know, things like Kickstarter kind of picking up, even though I'm sure the Kickstarter bubble is actually kind of bursting now too. But you know, just a lot of people who are in it for the art more than were in it for the art, you know, 30 years ago.
Especially in the past 2 years, you've seen a lot of veteran developers just drop out and go into indie.
Exactly, well, no, yeah.
Even in indie, I mean, I'd like to believe a lot of these guys are in for the art, but most of them are in for the ego.
Yeah, they are. It's just another way to make their money.
Yeah. I believe there are quite a few of them there, but guys with more business savvy, guys with more, you know, drive to fuel their ego are doing much better. That's the way the world works.
I'm sure they're doing perfectly, you know, I'm sure they're doing better in terms of business, but I'm just saying that I don't think that the industry needs to necessarily die. The business side of things could compress. I don't, without the artistic side of things going away necessarily either. I think they are not necessarily, they're certainly interconnected, but I don't know that they are necessarily, what's the word I'm looking for? Completely codependent.
Well, when developers and business people understand that fact, that's when they become successful.
Okay. Yeah, sure.
Every major independent studio has embraced that theory and implemented it. Everyone.
Yeah, and I think you're going to also see a lot of, I think it was Digital Chocolate's Trip Hawkins who said you're going to see publishers rising a lot more in the mobile space. EA is already bringing over a bunch of its stuff and doing really well at it. So I think you'll start seeing some of the indies being scooped up. Not at the speed that Zynga is doing it, but slowly over time, maybe over the next 2 or 3 years.
Well, Mike, I mean, all you guys did. I did an interview with a gentleman named Steve Dangler. Interesting guy. He founded Z.com, which is that currency converter site that's been up since like the internet
forever.
Yeah, I literally just used that yesterday.
Yeah, so Steve, I had the pleasure of finding out about him from a developer at Insomniac, friend of mine. Excuse me. And I had this interview, and the first we've got two things. The first one's already up. Second one will be up hopefully this week on the site. And he talks about what publishers are going to do to survive in the next couple of years, especially, you know, now that we see this huge trend into social mobile and what AAA is going to do in the next 4 to 5 years. And he talks about, you know, this social mobile scene, the guys that are really starting to push the creative aspect of it, the here's my game, I don't care if you pay me money, this is what I do, and they make tons of money because it's awesome, are the guys that you're going to see start getting up. Like, EA is going to, you know, here, we want you to make this game, here's some funding, make something cooler. They're going to have a much less hands-on approach than they've had in the, you know, in the past. But, you know, our job, you know, what we need to see is from a publisher standpoint is these guys that are coming out that are starting to embrace Kickstarter, that are starting to embrace Steam, that are doing huge amount of works in their own distribution schemes, are the ones that are going to be bought up. It's not going to be these guys that have, you know, made, you know, how to put it, made like three franchises. They're all popular. The Call of Duty guys, they've got no problem getting hires. They've got no problem making a game. They've got no problem getting a budget. Now I think EA, Activision, Ubisoft are going to be a little bit more open and a little bit more, you know, less risk adverse to embracing what these indie guys can do. And I think we're going to start seeing, you know, budgets that are reserved for AAA, they're going to go up, but budgets are going to be put out. They're going to do more frequently on social mobile titles, more and more, obviously, but they're going to put more money into them. So here's 10 to 15 million for a good social title, something that embraces us. And then you'll still have your AAA, but in much less of capacity. You're only going to have, like, here's Battlefield, here's Call of Duty, here's Assassin's Creed. You know what I'm saying?
Right. You have your Avengers, you know, you have your three, like, blockbuster movies every year, but then you have, you know, 100,000 art films all coming out. And even in the movie industry, you're kind of seeing a trend towards go towards that now too.
Yeah, very much, very much. I think that's what we're going to see: more, less money, but more draw, or not more draw, more cash flow. So you're going to see, here's 15 million. This makes me 100 million. Here's 300 million for this AAA huge game, but I'm going to make $3 billion. So they're going to put that kind of risk only in the stuff they know, but they're going to put a little bit more risk, technically less money for them, into smaller titles, but they'll see a good return on most of them. I mean, remember, investing is you put, you know, say you've got $100 million, you put $25 million into four projects, you hope one of them makes it, and that one will give you your money. This is, you know, a good amount of how investors actually do a lot of their investing around titles. This is something, you know, my dad has been doing it for years. He does private investing. He does angel groups. The mentality is, you know, you expect three of these to fail, but one of them to make it. Get what I'm saying?
Right.
So I see that. That's how mobile's going to go. That's how I believe.
I think the developers themselves will probably stay indie. You'll probably see what happened with Rovio and whatever, Casey's Constructions, where they bought the IP and pretty much the game from the developer. But the developer stays independent. So they get a proven title, they get to control it, but the developer gets to continue on their way, they get their payday, they get to go on and do whatever they want afterwards. Just not with that IP.
All right, so that sounds like we've talked about
that. Thoroughly exhausted it.
Yeah, that's a lot to think about, but yeah. It sounds like Deli, you wanted us to move on to Xbox,
yeah,
right?
So, and when Ben gets back, he'll hop right in. But one of the reasons that we wanted to have, and it was actually a really good segue from all this financial talk into our first big E3 segment of the season. It is kind of a season, right? E3 is essentially end of April until end of June with all the announcements and predictions and news and all that fun stuff, but
it is a big to do. Sure,
it's the best fun.
all right, and so we wanted to get Ben and Mike on actually. What? Mom, I'm podcasting. Where's the meatloaf?
Give me some chocolate milk.
Give me some chocolate milk and Oreos.
The meatloaf.
Where is the meatloaf?
Fuck.
See, Ben, you need to be like me. I have a netbook so I can walk around the house while I'm doing this.
That's totally the way to do it.
You guys scoff at me from recording off of my iPad.
And dropping your call every 5 minutes.
Yeah, see, we don't even think that's a joke because it happens every day.
So, E3, Microsoft, this week we'll talk about Microsoft, and it's kind of a big E3 for Microsoft because they are definitely, I think they're definitely towards the end of the Xbox's, they were the Xbox 360, towards the end of this lifespan, towards the end of this generation, and you're seeing Nintendo with the Gen 4 console.
I don't want to punch you in the face for saying that.
With the Wii U. So Microsoft has Entertainment Evolved is, I think, their catchphrase, their main line for E3 this year. So I want to find out what you guys expect, what you hope, what our predictions are going forward for Microsoft at E3 this year, which obviously ties into all the big stuff the rest of the year and really sets up Microsoft for these next couple of years. So let's just dive right in. I mean, there's been a lot of news. Obviously the elephant in the room is the beer that Ben is opening.
What? No. There's no beer here.
Not anymore. You drank it that quickly. No, the elephant in the room is the Xbox hardware, new Xbox hardware. And we've been hearing rumors. Microsoft came out and denied that there was going to be any new hardware and there will be no new Xbox at E3. But what do you guys feel? Do you guys feel that there will be some sort of hardware announcement, whether it's Xbox or otherwise?
No. They don't really have the biggest of reasons, and they wouldn't come out and say no if they were actually going to do it, unless Sony threw something out there.
I think
they're not.
Ben, you can go.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. People who I hold in high esteem have assured me that the next Xbox and the next PS3, or next PlayStation, have been in development for quite some time. We all know this. That's business 101. Mm-hmm. You don't just sit there holding onto your butts hoping things happen. But
the entire podcast.
What?
Shit. Just keep talking.
I'm confused. Anyways, I don't think they're going to announce anything. Why? Xbox has a lot riding on it. One, Xbox TV. You're going to see a more media-centric kind of Xbox, but one that still, you know, goes like, oh, hey, we're totally about you core gamers. Here's Black Ops. Here's Halo 4. This is all the cool games you all want.
Here's a bunch of games we had nothing to do with, but we're going to...
Correct.
Which has been their whole strategy, and it has paid off.
Correct. I see Xbox 360 has one more good year. You will hear it unveiled next year. You will hear it for sale in 2014, maybe 15. Probably 14.
Good God, that's a bit beyond what I was thinking.
I was thinking 14.
I think 2014.
I was thinking... fall of 13 or at the latest spring of 14.
Absolutely not. They're holding on this belief that they can have a 10-year cycle, and they're wrong. They can have an 8 or 9-year cycle because we're
the 10-year cycle includes the years of falling off like the PS2.
Like the PS3 did, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean PS2.
Yeah.
You make a point, but I think they're banking on it. The problem is, one, it'd be market suicide to have a new console right now. Just because the economy is still pretty bad. People don't want to spend that kind of money on entertainment. You know, we all like to fool ourselves into think, oh, hey, you know, the economy is doing bad. People are going to spend money on entertainment to make themselves feel better. That's incredibly incorrect for something that's probably going to cost $400 to $500.
I don't think that is going to be the case, though, because with the hardware that they're already speccing out isn't all that, you know, out there.
Every single developer we've talked to, everyone – has said development costs are going to be higher. That means that console is going to be higher. We're going to have a $400 to $500 console at launch. That I am pretty much
high end 400.
I think five
or subsidized.
The subsidized model. That'll be interesting.
You know, I think you know what that subsidized model is? That's just test for the next console.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. Yep. That we could see. I don't think it's going to work. More or less because they're saying Microsoft stores only, which is weird.
Yeah, I still think that's part of the test.
Yeah.
I
think I could drive on a single gas tank to a Microsoft store.
Yeah, yeah. I wouldn't be able to.
What I think we're going to see is we're going to see the next console unveiled at 2013 for E3. It'll be on sale 2014. And in that time, we will have a $400 to $500 console. We will have TV ready. We will have Kinect 2, maybe even 3 at this point, ready to go. We will have core games set on Kinect and motion control. This also works for PlayStation 3, which I'm sure they've killed Move. I don't know if anyone's paid attention, but they've killed Move.
Well, yeah. I mean, they never cared about it to begin with.
Well, they killed it. No one knows. You can't even buy new Moves at like GameStop anymore, and that's funny. But I think we're going to see more Kinect. We're going to see less games, but bigger games. We're going to have Halo 5. We're going to have Call of Duty, White Ops 4, whatever. And we're going to have more content focused on digital distribution. They will have to give us bigger hard drives from the onset. They will.
Oh, yeah, and they will.
There's no way to get around it.
Yeah, the only reason they're not doing it now is because they don't have to.
Yeah, exactly. They don't. You don't rely on how much space you get.
And the expectation isn't there yet in the mainstream.
Mm-hmm. So, Wii U, probably in a bad position. I also think it is.
Probably was a very unnecessary word in that sense.
Wii U is in a position.
It's just a stopgap system anyways.
Good point. I fear for Nintendo. I really do.
Well, we'll touch on Nintendo in a couple weeks here, but
fair enough.
You know, I think what's interesting about Microsoft is this. I think we'll see potentially see a new Kinect this year. I think that's what might be probably a slimmed down Kinect or something to go along with
a wider angle lens camera,
maybe a wider angle. I mean, it can be like Kinect 1.5 or something, but I think they're going to update it.
From what we've heard, if I may, the new Kinects are apparently able to even see your individual fingers.
I think that's the PC ones can.
Yeah, that's the PC unit.
But it is a PC unit, but it's also,
still a Kinect.
It's still a Kinect. So I think that hardware, I think, is going to be either announced or hinted at or something to the point of, Microsoft is going to hit a wall in their sales of the Xbox 360 Kinect hardware. So I think they need to keep that going and introducing a new Kinect that's much more accurate, where you can play Guitar Hero without instruments, but and it maps your fingers.
God, I want suicide before that happens.
That sounds fantastic. This is me virtually picking my nose with my pinky. No, I think I can see that definitely taking place, but I also see maybe not so much a brand new Xbox hardware, but I definitely see the push for the Xbox like a media bundle, and basically that does include a price drop. It does include some type of subsidy to the point where I could see AT&T UVerse. AT&T, by the way, just pulled their Xbox media kit for quote unquote improvements. I think that news broke earlier today or late last night. So you can no longer buy the Xbox UVerse kit from AT&T's website. I think there could be an announcement that says, "Hey, you can upgrade your AT&T UVerse account and get Xbox Live service included. Oh, by the way, that won't go against your monthly data cap, so you can play all of Xbox you want and online without the without those issues. So potentially with Comcast as well, with Time Warner Cable." I really think that is where Microsoft could be positioning their system, and that would help make the console much less expensive if you know, if it's being included in some of these DVR bundles.
I keep wondering about the price drop, if they're gonna, you know, announce it at this E3 or wait until they're not on the top of the charts to announce it. Because they could just use it as a, you know, a thorn. They could just stab whoever they want with it. If they lose that top spot, they could.
No, consider this. Nintendo did the same thing. They announced they were already at the top, and they announced the stupid Wii Fit board, which sold more. And went. It kept them going for years and years and years and years. So, you guys are looking at the.
No.
I don't know what you're talking about, Dad.
What are you talking about?
That is definitely going to be our. That'll be in our post.
Oh my god!
So it doesn't. I wouldn't wait if I was Microsoft, because that somebody could catch up. I would, if I was them, I would go all out right now and say, "Hey, by the way, boom, boom, boom."
They're not worried about anybody catching up. They're just worried about making as much money as they can for as long as they can.
You know what? Exactly it. And what we mentioned earlier about the NPDs not being as important is kind of true here. I mean, you're seeing less and less now. Sony and Nintendo talking about all the great successes they've had every month. Less press releases from them. Microsoft has even downplayed their NPD wins because they know, you know what?
They're like, yeah, we're at the top.
Yes, they're still playing them, though.
Yeah, oh, they definitely.
They are still playing them.
So, you know, whether they're at the top, whether they're on top or on bottom, they still want to come.
Yeah.
In first place.
I think this E3, as Ben said, you're going to be seeing that media push.
Yeah.
But the reason Microsoft isn't going to do anything is, one, they want to ride out Kinect. But yeah. Two, they're launching Windows 8 this year.
Yes.
And that's what they're focused on. If anything, you'll probably see some Windows 8 features in the Xbox dashboard.
There's a discussion of Internet Explorer in Microsoft.
Yep. Yeah.
The Xbox.
Right.
I can't wait to Bing Internet Explorer and then Bing Google so that I can search for Firefox in my Internet Explorer on my Xbox.
I'm a dedicated Chrome user. I haven't touched Internet Explorer forever, but I honestly have to say, if they go Internet Explorer on the Microsoft Xbox, who cares?
Exactly.
This is coming up. Okay. If it has full flash support.
Well, no, I mean, no, PlayStation 3 has had that for how long?
They've had limited flash support.
Before you guys go any further, consider this: by itself, Internet Explorer on a console anymore is pretty worthless. Combine it with because we have it on our phones, we have it on our tablets, we have it on our laptops. Combine it with Kinect. Combine it with voice software, where you can say Xbox, Bing, you know, latest episode of Epic Mealtime, and then all of a sudden it'll hop onto YouTube and. It'll show you the latest episode of it in real time. Or Microsoft, what are you giggling about?
I just keep thinking, like, Xbox, Bing, pornography. Fucking pornography on your 43-inch HD TV. You just fall backwards.
Xbox, Bing, stereoscopic penises.
I don't care about...
This discussion has turned uncomfortable.
internet browsers or really any... PC features on my consoles.
Quote all of this in your next article.
Just because I have a PC hooked up to my TV, anyways.
Oh, but same here. That's what I'm using right now.
But yeah, you know, for those people that don't hook up their PCs to their computers, like the mass public that's buying the Kinect
market, growing market of
it really is. I think it's actually really smart of Microsoft, and then again, it ties back into the whole Windows 8. Experience. They're pushing Windows 8 to kind of go. It's bridging all, their entire lineup of devices, right?
And go ahead.
No, I was gonna say from phones to tablets, you know, the ARM tablets to now Xbox and PCs. I mean, they really want Windows 8 to be the focal point.
Yeah, and I mean that's the tagline that they're selling it with: Windows everywhere. And you can see they've started to kill off. They killed off Azure. They killed off the Zune brand. They're going to bring everything together, so they can try to sell you on that full ecosystem.
It's very Apple-like when you think of it, right?
Yeah.
Especially with, I wouldn't doubt that we're going to see more cloud functionality. So, I think it could be very cool where they say, hey, you can play an XBLA game. You're going to play Trials Evolution on your Xbox, and you're going to pause it, and you're going to pick it up on your Windows phone, and you're going to pause it, and you're going to pick it up on your PC later on. Very, I don't want to say on live-ish, but to the point where it is that whole Windows everywhere and Windows anywhere type of thing.
Yeah, that's worked out so great on the Vita.
Yeah, well, but there's been no games that support it.
The Vita's kind of like half-assed.
Well, wasn't the show. They did it.
Yeah,
it's actually pretty good.
What I'm pointing out, though, is Microsoft can barely get, like, they wouldn't even get crossplay between the Xbox and the PC Windows version, the Windows that they run or that they own of Portal and stuff. If you're not going to see them wanting to connect things to things, they're not going to take the time or the effort. They can't even get MMOs to work on their stupid system. Like, the interconnectivity between hardware and software and stuff on their systems isn't like this huge thing for them, at least not in video games. And they, there's no track record to prove that that is anything that they have any interest in doing or anything that they are capable of.
They already have Windows Media Center, on 360. And people use that quite a bit.
But what I'm saying was video games.
And I was going to say beyond that, like, that's it. Like, but all they care about is the media.
Yeah, and the problem that you are pointing out, Stevens, the fact that Xbox Live is just horribly closed right now, and developers have issues with it, whereas Sony has been jumping from behind. So, of course, they're making these more open moves.
Yeah, it's open to a fault.
But no, I would say that their openness has not been their fault. The thing that's been wrong with them is getting behind so far behind in the first place.
But they're so wide open that people don't have any specific direction to take anything in.
That's not a problem with them being too open, in my opinion. That's a problem with them not providing the tools that people need to utilize that sandbox that they have kind of...
Yeah, that's Sony not stepping in and giving a clear, hard vision. But things like Portal 2, Dust 514, those things can only happen when you allow that openness.
I think Dust, that's where we're going to start to see a little bit more growth on Sony's part. Because, obviously CCP is taking the brunt of what's going to happen here. But if we see Dust 514 turn into not even a success, but a cult hit, I think Sony's going to be more open.
As a longtime EVE Online fan, I can tell you right now that the EVE Online community is the definition of a cult following.
EVE Online is not, it's not a video game. It's a market. If I worked at the stock exchange, I should play EVE Online to get a better idea of what I'm doing in life.
Right. I'm a long time EVE Online player. And I can tell you that just from curiosity seekers alone, you're going to get a diehard community. It might not be the world's biggest community. But then again, it might be bigger than the EVE Online community, just because I think a shooter is certainly more accessible than the actual game that there is right there. But even the people coming in from EVE Online are going to be die hard behind this thing. There is going to be a community there. There's going to be support there from players and stuff like that, even if it is not, pulling down Call of Duty numbers or even like Starhawk numbers. But there will be people there. And pushing it as free to play is another very smart move on their part, and it will just make that community even larger. And again, that's, like you said, that's CCP will be reaping most of the benefits from that, but it certainly provides a really cool precedent for Sony, or not even necessarily a precedent, because the precedent has kind of been set with Portal, and even before that, Unreal Tournament 3 allowed PC mods to be downloaded straight to the PS3 version of Unreal Tournament.
But this is like the first real time we're getting...
Portal co-op was real time. It's just it wasn't real time
not
with
to
a fucking
extent.
300,000 people on one end of on each end of it. Yeah,
right.
Two people at a time as opposed to 500,000 or yeah. So, it's super cool and super interesting. And if that sort of thing
can continue, which it seems like it is, considering this is the second sort of iteration of this synchronicity event that Sony is kind of breeding itself into. That's very cool, and I'd like to see. I'd almost like to see more where that goes on the PlayStation 4 or the Orbis or whatever we're eventually going to call it.
And see, that's Microsoft's problem. Sony is making those inroads, and Microsoft is holding back. And they're not Apple, so they can't just do whatever they want with their segment and survive it. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they need to open up. They need to allow more.
And do they, though? I mean, 2 years ago, Xbox Live got them, like, $1.2 billion last year. It was like $1.5 billion in revenue. It seems like I don't see them changing what has been a pretty proven success so far.
But nothing that is successful stays successful forever without changing. Like, the world around it is
but
changing.
But they won't completely reverse the direction they're going, which is what opening up that platform to that degree would be.
Sure, but they have to start making. But even Sony hasn't gone and completely reversed their direction either. They're Mike put it, they're making those inroads. They're making these sort of incremental nudges towards a very interesting and very cool direction that I could mean very big things in the future. Whereas Microsoft isn't changing at all in a lot of ways. In a lot of ways, they're making their services worse by less accessible by increasing the price. You make it slightly less accessible by removing even something like Inside Xbox. You're removing part of the value of that service.
With Inside Xbox, I mean, nobody really watched it.
It was not getting any numbers. That's why it got pulled.
None at all. But you look, think of it this way. Certainly not Xbox. Xbox. Give me a sec. What have they done? What did they just recently add? The TV apps. Stuff, obviously. Apps. I think they're TV more apps, working in line with becoming more accessible, if anything.
In a personal way, but not games.
Even with games, I mean, it's a tough line, but yeah, I do think they are growing to an extent.
Microsoft is, I guess, as a whole, really wants to be your multimedia center. They don't want your Xbox to be the thing you play games on. They want your Xbox to be like the dream idea of the Apple TV. They want it to be where you listen to your music and where you watch your TV and what you hook up to, what you have constantly running at all times to run your stuff, which is why you create something like the Kinect. So it's like you create, it's their way of making it more accessible to people who don't want to use it for video games and stuff like that.
Yeah, and I think once again, it seems to be working. Besides PCs, it's the most used object for watching online ads.
And I'm not saying that's a bad. I'm not saying it's not working, and I'm not saying it's a bad thing. But I'm saying that it is slowly becoming. They are slowly starting to edge away from the things that I am personally interested in.
But you are technically
a minority.
What you want is not what, the majority of the audience wants.
And I'll fully admit that. I'm not saying that it's a bad thing. I'm just saying that for me personally, that is where they're moving away. And it's a very smart business move on their part, probably, to, make it into this multimedia device. It's partially why I think that Sony really needs to lean really, really hard into the gaming thing to become stop trying to catch up to either the Wii or the Xbox and become like the what you think of when you think of video games instead of sort of the Xbox. But that I'm not going to get too deep into Sony because that's not what we're talking about. But
I think Microsoft needs to make Xbox Live to Apple's iTunes what PSN is to Xbox Live. Be a little bit more open. Be a little bit better because ad revenue will take you to a certain point, but content sales, that's what Microsoft needs. That's why Apple keeps growing year after year after year, because they take a 30% cut of everything that comes through and is sold. Mm-hmm. And that's what Microsoft wants.
Yeah. I just Yeah, that's absolutely what they need to do. PSN. I don't know any sales from PSN because they don't. I tend to think that PSN game sales aren't that great because they don't.
You can look at leaderboards oftentimes too, and just kind of get it that way.
Well, can you, or is it? Very highly representative because so many people share gamer tags and.
It's
of games.
As close as you're going to get right now. I mean,
yeah,
it was. Go ahead.
They just released a PSN like top 20, didn't they? It's like I Am Alive was at the top or something like that.
Yeah,
but they didn't put any specific
numbers. Yeah,
which
they put up their top sellers every week. There's like literally a section on the PSN that says their top sellers and what order they're in. They just never give numbers.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's PSN. That's not 360, I guess, which is what we're supposed to talk about.
As for more Microsoft announcements, I don't expect much of anything. I don't expect anything out of Microsoft.
Here's something that we've been hearing about is that the Kinect, they're calling it the Play Fit, which is essentially their version of Wii Fit. It's not a board, but it's a heart rate monitor that is able to work across any Kinect-enabled game, right?
The Wii Vitality Sensor?
Exactly, it's a Vitality Sensor. You giggle, but at the same time, anybody who, I'm going to sound a little sexist when I say it, but women especially might say, hey, I'm able to play these workout games now, the Your Shape stuff, whatever. I'm able to also play these Kinect games with my kids, still manage my, my workouts, make sure that I'm being active. And all that goes into the Microsoft Cloud or whatever on the Kinect, and they're able to track their workouts. I think Microsoft wants to push it, that they're utilizing that to push into more kind of non-traditional gaming things, and it is the kind of the next level up or the next step up for fitness. Is that now you have this tracking bit? Maybe you take it with you. Maybe it doesn't necessarily have to link up to the Xbox all the time. Maybe you can take it with you and it becomes a pedometer or a Fitbit or something.
I just have this image in my head of somebody slinging a Kinect over their shoulder as they're running, and the Kinect is like shouting out like a sort of passive aggressive advice on their
It'd be a beautiful commercial. Like people just running, happy with our Kinects, multicultural families just
there
doing jumping jacks and throwing frisbee.
You have a Star Wars Kinect console playing the Star Trek game with Kinect controls.
Oh God, that
idea is the best idea.
But let's get into games. Obviously, Halo 4. They've been building that up. That's their kind of marquee title this year. But and then Fable: The Journey, and probably whatever Harmonix is working on now, because apparently they're working on another motion controlled game that they're going to be announcing here soon.
PlayStation Move exclusive.
Yeah. But what else? I mean, are we going to see any other first party things? I mean, are we going to see anything from Epic? Are we going to see? We are going to see. I can almost guarantee you, Black Ops 2 will be on stage there, because it seems like Call of Duty is always on stage at Microsoft's event. But will we see GTA 5? Will we see any of that kind of stuff?
No, you'll see Splinter Cell 6, if I had to guess.
No,
it's about
They're gonna do multi-platform.
You know what they're doing? They're not doing splitters. They're not doing time splitters. They're not doing Splinter Cell 6. You know what I'm gonna hope for? Because I think this got hinted.
Vegas 3.
No, they're working on Patriots. I am banking, and I seriously am banking on this for
Brute Force 2.
And the name has just escaped me. Darn it, I'm an idiot.
Viva Pinata 3.
No. Silicon Knights. What's their title?
Too Human?
No, not Too. No, nobody likes Too Human.
Eternal Darkness.
Thank you. Eternal Darkness. I bet you $10 right now. Anyone can take that. I bet we're going to hear a next Eternal Darkness this year.
I will take that bet. Mm.
All right. $10.
That sounds like
absolutely. How are we going to pay this out?
I will be at E3. How about you?
I won't.
Here's a better question. How is Silicon Knights going to pay out for a new fucking game?
Hey, they made all that money off of X-Men Destiny.
Oh, yeah. That's sweet, sweet cash.
They have like 20 people in that studio.
That's true.
No. Halo 4 is fan fiction at this point, for all I care. honestly, it really is. They recruited a ton of guys from the Halo Wiki, and they recruited like two guys from Bungie. There's a reason why Bungie people didn't stick with Halo. Mm. And I am very disappointed. I honestly could care less about Halo anymore.
I really want them to lean even heavier and more heavily into that just to piss you off more. So like the next game they announced at E3 is 343 is going to be working on the next myth game or mythic game.
So head desk all day. I think we're, you know, Namco did well, so nothing there.
Pac-Man Championship.
We'll hear Dark Souls PC, but I'm trying to think of Microsoft stuff. What does anyone care about on Microsoft? Fallout. We'll hear a new Fallout. You're hearing it first right now.
No, that's actually a pretty good possibility.
Yes.
I think we'll hear more of Skyrim DLC before that, though.
Well, obviously Dawnguard will probably be there.
Fallout next one now.
Dawnguard?
Dawnguard.
Dicks?
Yeah,
Dawnguard. No, we're guarding Don Draper.
Dawnguard.
Fallout Don Draper.
First parties. What are we seeing as first party besides Fable the Dre?
Microsoft doesn't have much first party.
Yeah, Rare is going to work on Perfect Dark 2.
No,
Perfect Dark 1.
You leave.
Perfect Dark 1.
Microsoft has like not cared about first party games for 3 years now.
They've destroyed their first party section.
They never really had a first party publishing to begin with. That was for mainstream games.
They've deliberately gone out of their way to remove what first party presence they did have.
Instead of spending $35 million developing games, they spend about $6 million co-marketing a game and get a much bigger return.
You know what I tell you I'm really looking forward to? Medal of Honor Warfare.
You know, I wouldn't doubt if we see that there.
I don't know.
You think
They'll be at EA's own press conference.
Yeah, or maybe get announced. Maybe they make a deal with Sony to try and maybe Sony tries to back some horse like they constantly
Sony,
do. But
once again,
how about Metal Gear Rising?
No, get out! Don't talk about it.
That'll probably be there though.
So angry about Platinum Games doing what they're doing.
You were just angry about everything, aren't you?
Platinum Games is the right choice.
Yeah, exactly. Like Platinum Games getting on that was the best thing I heard about that.
Yeah, no.
Platinum Games has been nothing but gold.
Mm-hmm.
Mad World, Bayonetta, Vanquish, three great games.
Vanquish, like especially Jesus Christ, like Vanquish is basically Metal Gear Rising already. Like. Giant robots, dude.
Mine, Bayonetta, and Vanquish, and you have Metal Gear Rising.
And I mean, you have the Kojima Productions guys in that one video, like actively saying that it wasn't working. Mm-hmm. For Japanese people to do that it had to be horrible.
Right.
That was corporate seppuku.
Right. I mean, they don't normally do that. They would just quietly cancel it.
Yeah, absolutely. It getting passed off, like they must have seen something in Platinum to be able to pull it off, because that's something that doesn't happen.
Yeah, they saw Vanquish.
No, Kojima just gave up. He's been talking for years about not caring anymore.
Kojima never gives up. He never gives up anything. Like he keeps just going back to that well over and over and over and over again.
You guys saw Republic, right?
Republic,
whatever.
I have no idea what it's actually called.
Republic. So it's a game coming out from Ryan Payton, who was a producer, an American guy, who's now working on a game for iOS. He quit Kojima Productions.
And 343.
Yeah, he quit 343.
Well, he's a terminal quitter.
Yeah, he's not.
He's a David Jaffe.
He quit quits everything.
David Jaffe fucking works with Sony to then quits them to make his own company, then quits them as soon as they make their bigger game, and now is doing.
David Jaffe should have got told out by Ego Raptor when he did that tester thing.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
don't bring tester references into this place. This is a place of
sorry, I'm terrible. Anyways. my point is, Ryan Payton left. Kojima doesn't care anymore.
He left literally right after Metal Gear Solid 4 came out, though. Or maybe even before it came out.
It was right before it came out. He left.
Yeah, it was right before it came out.
For 343 for Halo, and then he left, like, in the middle of that, just like, I'm done.
He said it wasn't his game anymore, like, wasn't what he envisioned for the game, I think was the quote. Something, it's floating around there somewhere.
Yeah, he's like, it's. I don't think that has anything to do with anything. It's just his personality. He likes building things, not finishing things.
He is a notch.
I guess my point is, this is not Metal Gear. I am angered because Metal Gear is my bot. Like, that is my... Metal Gear Solid 4 is one of my top fives. Metal Gear Solid 3 is also one of my top fives.
Yeah. So I'm a pretty big Metal Gear Solid fanboy myself, so I won't deny anything you're saying.
Yeah, but I just don't think that a game in a different genre is automatically bad.
But so I do. It's unfortunate. I'm usually not this judgmental, but Metal Gear Solid is not this kind of game.
And well, it's not Metal Gear Solid.
Exactly.
Metal Gear Rising.
Is Metal Gear Rising.
Get out.
This is Metal Gear to Metal Gear Solid kind of change.
Yeah, and I'd argue they set it up in all of the cutscenes with Raiden.
Oh,
yeah,
absolutely.
Metal Gear Solid 4. They set this game up.
Who didn't want to be playing those scenes?
That shit was already in the universe. Like, it's that's
well, no, they're
that,
talking about like all of his exploits in Budapest and all those other countries and whatnot. Obviously, we knew it was going to happen. But I was hoping and praying it would not happen in such a terrible way that it did today, like this game. I mean, I was slightly optimistic when I saw the first reveal trailer, and now I'm just absolutely appalled, astounded.
It's going to be if it's in the vein of Bayonetta action with a crazy over-the-top, Kojima-inspired... Platinum led story, it could be amazing.
But I disagree because that's not Metal Gear in any way. Sorry. Remember, I'm the guy with guns, gear, and all that kind of nonsense.
And see, this is why Kojima has been dying inside for years. Because he wants to do something else.
No, he doesn't. He wants to do what he enjoys. Metal Gear is what he enjoys. He doesn't like the whole idea of adding all this kind of stuff. I guarantee you there's no way he likes Revenge.
Well, he wasn't working on Metal Gear Rising to begin with, though.
Well, he's been a part of it, though.
Technically, what's his name? The second assistant director of Metal Gear Solid 4 was the one leading this project to begin with. So, yeah, I mean...
That poor guy.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay. So there... So, okay, to close out the Microsoft talk, I've got I'm going to go through a list of games, and you guys are all going to tell me yes or no, just simple yes or no if you think
we'll just say no to all of them. Yeah,
if you think they're going to be shown during Microsoft's press conference in some way or another, all right? You guys ready?
Yep.
All right. Grand Theft Auto 5.
Yes. Yeah,
probably.
No.
Definitely probably. Yes.
Dally, call us out by name.
Steven says no. Everybody else says yes.
Why do you say no?
I'm sure it will be there. I just, for some reason, I got a gut feeling that this one isn't going to be a Microsoft pushed, or not necessarily Microsoft pushed, but like I don't feel that same kind of vibe coming off of Grand Theft Auto 5 that I felt coming into Grand Theft Auto 4 with the Lost and the Damned
DLC thing. Sure. Here's the thing, Microsoft. Co-marketed both Red Dead, Max Payne, and Grand Theft Auto 4. They have no reason to stop their co-marketing partnership now.
Yeah, I'm just telling you that this is a gut feeling. So.
Okay, so we'll go through these quick because I have a bit of a list, so I don't need Eric dictating every single one. No, I'm just kidding, Eric. I love you.
Yes, Smith.
No,
I just fight you.
Yeah. Halo Wars 2.
No.
No.
Yes.
No.
Who said yes?
Ensemble's gone.
Of course it was me.
Of course it was you.
No, I play Halo Wars religiously. Seriously. I was actually thinking of playing it tonight. But no.
So good. So good.
It's a great game. It's RPG for kids.
Okay.
RTS, maybe?
BioShock Infinite.
Yes.
No.
No.
With Kinect support.
They're not marketing that game this year.
It won't be at
Kinect support and a plastic Skyhook peripheral.
Wait. Quick thing. How can you say Bioshock Infinite's not going to be the E3 this year?
They said it
at the Microsoft press conference.
They said it.
I get that. Rational. How do you think it won't be?
Well, it might be behind closed doors, but it's not going to be at a press conference.
I guarantee you, if I go to Ken Levine and like, hey, Ken, how's it going? Bioshock Infinite, Microsoft, what is your take? You're like, yeah, we'll have it. That's going to happen.
It's not going to be a D3.
Hey, I got the Jewish thing going on. I don't think you'll hit me.
Up next, Crysis 3.
No. Yes.
Ben's like, no. Yes.
Maybe. I don't care.
How about, here's a big one. Elder Scrolls Online.
No.
No.
PC only.
PC only.
Okay. It has to be.
Yeah.
Microsoft will not see an MMO come out on a Microsoft console again. Like Final Fantasy XI was the last one. They can't even get Huxley out. Come on.
That's true.
And who cares, because MMOs on consoles is just dumb.
Yeah.
Tomb Raider, the reboot.
Ooh.
No. It got pushed back.
I think so.
I think it's too close to them pushing back to...
I think that's going to be co-marketed Sony thing, so...
No. You know what? You'll see that more at Square's booth? It's not Square.
Square.
Yeah, Square's booth. They did it last year. Really cool, though, actually.
Here's an interesting one. Final Fantasy Versus 13.
No.
Nope. It's not going to be E3 at all.
You don't think it'll be
E3?
It's not going to... It's not going to make a big push into the West until it makes a big push at TGS.
That's true. So
maybe this year it'll make a push at TGS.
Resident Evil 6. Remember, these are only at Microsoft's press conferences that we're getting.
Yes.
Isn't there the Dragon's Dogma has a demo of Resident Evil 6?
No, it does, but I'm just saying, is this going to be...
Yeah, I'm just saying I think that they already got something going on, so probably.
Okay.
Sure.
How about Kingdom Hearts 3?
No.
Beyond Good and Evil 2.
Ooh, you know what?
No.
I'm gonna give a 50-50.
They're still working on Rayman Legends. So
that's a small team that's working on Rayman Legends. And
same lead.
But he's already mentioned that he is working on he's got some work on Beyond Good and Evil 2 starting.
Yeah,
like I said, if you're going to see an Ubisoft game other than Assassin's Creed 3, it'll be Splinter Cell 6.
Yeah.
Because it's about time for them to give a trailer.
Hey, remember, Jade Raymond's working on Splinter Cell. That's going to happen.
That's why I said it's going to be a trailer or something, at least at E3.
And Ubisoft did say that they're going to be showcasing another new giant IP during E3.
I feel like
this
is going to be...
Actually, Rainbow Six Patriots, guys. What are we thinking here? Obviously.
Is that far enough along to show
up? Well, they sacked the entire creative team, remember?
Oh, that's right.
But they have to compensate for it. So I think we will see something. It'll probably be another pre-rendered, but we'll see something. I think if Ubisoft's going to do something besides Assassin's Creed, it will be Patriots. It has to be. They've invested way too much in marketing already.
Let's just say it'll be a Tom Clancy game.
Yeah, and they have a set release
date. Well, Ghost Recon Advanced Warfare is coming out this year, like in 3 days or what nonsense.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying. Never mind.
Here's one that's this. I'm calling this the Ryan Gann pick. Mirror's Edge 2.
Yes, please.
I'm going to say no.
Yeah, probably not, but it's just a game.
I'm going to add it, no.
That's going to be a Sony co-marketed thing anyway.
No, it would be an EA. It would be at their press conference.
EA's going to have a Warfighter and whatever Battlefield stuff they're going to be working on.
But if they're going to show off something for Mirror's Edge, like, it'll be there.
Oh, here's one. The Battlefield Elite program. Whatever battle
that is. Yes.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
Once again, that'll be at EA.
It'll be at EA, but yes. I mean, sorry. I know I'm Microsoft here.
Doom 4.
No.
Okay.
That's a Bethesda id thing now, and that's so weird.
Okay. Let's see. How about... I'm just going over a wonderful list of all these different games right now.
I gotta eat sometime, you know, Dally.
Really, well, yeah, I haven't eaten yet here. There, I eat really. Oh, here we go. Delta Force, Angel Falls.
Get out now. Get
out. No, the last one I'm gonna say is the next BioWare game. Whether it's Dragon Age 3, which they've said they've already been working on, or
good God, I hope that doesn't come out.
That's actually a good point there. Because BioWare's traditionally been on a 1 year schedule, but Mass Effect 3's out. They had horrible PR backlash for it. Dragon Age 2 did terrible, but
they're in a weird zone right now with Star Wars Galaxy.
Star Wars Galaxy.
Old Republic.
Star Wars: The Old Republic.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. No. They've got BioWare. What's the
Victory?
Victory. I was thinking Freedom. I was like, America. But Victory.
Fuck yeah. No,
but that's not BioWare though. Anyone that says
yeah, it's
that,
not. And neither is Old Republic.
Correct.
Right, because we get to say what is and is not part of their group.
Yeah, we can. Because that's part of BioWare publishing. It's BioWare publishing, not BioWare developing.
To see a new BioWare game, I'm more than confident that Mass Effect will continue, as much as I don't want it to, just because I'd like to see the preservation of the franchise. I don't think we'll see anything new BioWare.
Because
Generals 2 on 360, I'll bet you that's coming.
Yeah, I think that's going to cover them. They're gonna play on the BioWare name. But that's actually a really good question.
Yeah, because remember the report is they pulled people off Dragon Age 3 to shore up Old Republic.
Right.
God, they're going to have to put so much into Dragon Age 3. They have to make up for this. Dragon Age 2 did terrible, so did Mass Effect 3, which I am angry about. But
yeah, Mass Effect 3 really did do terrible, selling millions and millions of copies.
So here we go. So I'm now to kind of finish. I'm going to give each of you one pick or one thing, one comment, one wish. Let's say wish. What is your one wish for Microsoft at E3 this year? Let's start with Eric.
Viva Pinata 3.
All right, Steven.
Okay, so picture this.
Was Peter Molyneux coming back?
Head of Microsoft finishes the – or whoever, you know, whatever. Head of the Xbox division walks off stage. You know, the press conference –
back?
No. Walks off stage. You know, the press conference is done. Everything's done. It's silence. Everybody's kind of milling about getting ready to leave. Then he walks back on stage. He says – one more thing, and he shows he fucking pulls open a lever, and out of the floor rises the next Xbox. It looks exactly like the old Xbox, and right next to it is a TV, and everybody's just like, why does it look exactly the same? And it's running just old games and shit like that. It's like, meet the next Xbox, and the lights dim. The only thing is, we didn't like the monitor, so we got rid of it. Somebody takes the TV away, and it's just a holographic projection of Commander Shepard running around on screen. Next to
and I'm the one that's been drinking beer here, so
I'm half expecting Steven. It's all going to end with a holographic Commander Shepard comes out on stage and says, "I'm Commander Shepard, and I endorse the Xbox 360." Yeah.
This is my favorite.
This is my favorite Xbox on the Citadel.
How about you, Mike? Any one wish for Microsoft this year?
I think that about sums up all of our
all right, Mike has
first party nothing. Releases.
We may have lost Mike.
Man, he's Mike's super dead, succinct.
No, wait, I'm here.
Oh, there you are. Okay.
I honestly don't expect anything from Microsoft.
Good man.
Like I said, I think Windows 8 is where they're going to be focused. So they're just going to go out, do a little song and dance, maybe say media, and then they're going to walk off stage.
Can you think of any specific media integration that they might bring in? Or something?
No, because I mean they've covered everything. They got Netflix, they got Hulu. I mean, those are the big ones. Comcast, Verizon. I mean, now they're just throwing extra stuff on there just to say they have it. So I really don't expect a lot from Microsoft. This year is just holding position.
Yeah.
Until next year.
Just don't lose ground.
Right.
What's your prediction? Or what's your one hope for Microsoft this year at E3?
That Halo 4 actually is good.
Oh, wow. I think it will be.
Sorry. I'm sorry. That was mean to me.
No.
Can I give my real prediction?
Yeah, give your real prediction, then I'll jump in with mine, which will floor everybody.
Nixie.
A new Nixie?
We're gonna get one. We're gonna crank out one more user interface onto that thing before it goes into the ET pile.
Well, they did announce there's gonna be. Well, they didn't announce, but it's a rumor. There's gonna be some slight changes. So.
Maybe Netflix that actually works.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm going to throw down with my one wish, Half-Life 3.
Ooh.
Thank you, everybody. You have been listening to the Side Quest episode.
Dalibor Dymovsky was killed by a bolt of lightning that night.
407. I am Dally Dymovsky, a.k.a. Cool Rats on Twitter. Joining me, as usual, Eric Smith.
Goodbye.
Steve Van Strum.
Wait, I don't give my E3 prediction?
Oh, I thought you gave yours. You said Halo 4. No. Go ahead. What's your E3 prediction? I thought I said Ben.
No, you said Al. Ooh, this is hurtful. My E3 prediction. Microsoft, realistically, they're going to talk more about how much their Xbox 360 is all about all-around entertainment. My hope and dream... nothing. I don't know.
Orange Box 2.
Gears of what? War.
Orange Box 2.
No. Honestly, I have to say I really, really, really would go out, rush, and be really fanatical if they came out and said, here is
Uncharted
Eternal
4.
Darkness 2. No. Eternal Darkness for Xbox 360, the second one. That would probably be the best feasible thing I could possibly think of that could ever be Xbox 360. Unfortunately, I don't think there's anything else that would excite me, arouse me, or make me happy. Ooh, but who maybe? That's really all I can think of. But anyways, back to what you were doing.
Yes, and that lovely voice you just heard was one Ben Strauss from GamesIndustry.biz. Huh?
Who's that guy?
Who's that guy?
I've never heard of Ben Strauss.
How about Benjamin? You like Benjamin?
I've never heard him either.
Sorry, 4chan. You got
Ben
the wrong
Kuchera,
website.
Who's been on the podcast this whole time, guys.
And then, and yeah, also,
Ben Kuchera.
And joining us for this final segment, Mike Williams.
I love you all.
Yes.
And remember,
what?
You can leave your tribute at my feet or on the internet at my Twitter.
Where can we find you, Mike?
You can find me at Automatic Zen, where I pontificate about everything that is beautiful about me and the industry.
Ben, where can we find you on the Twitters?
I go by the weird name of Sinner101GR, where I talk about military things, gun things, scotch things, cigar things, and I guess games. I don't know.
All right. And you can find the rest of us in the post, which I will leave the information at. So, once again, thank everybody. This has been The Side Quest. Bye.
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 In a fever at the castle.